You're listening to Around Comics, episode 276. Chicago, this is Around Comics. Greetings, listeners. It is I, Brian Salazar, here again with another installment of your favorite comic culture roundtable. I bet some of you thought we wouldn't be back. Well, fear not, the last one was so fun we decided to do it again. This time we, and by we I mean myself and the ever-present Christopher Niesman, are once again joined by Comic Book Resources news editor Kyle Figley, as well as artist and longtime friend of the program Tom Kelly. The four of us pore over a cornucopia of subjects, including Detective Comics, the new Thor trailer, The Walking Dead Season 1, and much, much more. Later in the episode, Kyle has to leave and is replaced by one of our favorite creators, Mike Norton, who fills us in on some Young Justice information. That's about it for this month. Look for us in the new year, and happy holidays to all our listeners.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
People make such a huge deal out of that book, like it's a mess, but it's like it's a noir story. Those stories were messes. Look at The Maltese Falcon is the fucking biggest mess of a story ever. You still don't. The writer didn't even know what happened to characters. You know how they got killed. It's a disaster. Well, but it's a cool movie.
Well, do you know? And I've always wondered this on that era of film. Were they doing screenplays? But how did they do that?
Fun fact: Ed Brubaker's uncle, I think, was the screenwriter who wrote a lot of noir adaptations of screenplays in that. I don't remember where I saw Ed talk about this once, but
yeah, you're right. Yeah, he talked about it. In the back of
it might have been the Comics Journal interview that he did. I don't know,
maybe.
But somewhere he said, that he didn't even know for years. He didn't know that his uncle was a writer, and then he was like, "Oh, my uncle's a writer, and my uncle writes screenplays of the kind of shit I love," you know. And he said he realized it later. But yeah, there were dudes who wrote stuff at the back.
They were just freaking churning out.
Well, Maltese Falcon was based on a book.
Dashiell Hammett.
Dashiell Hammett. And they, the screenwriters, there's an interesting interview, once again, I don't know where I read it, but there was an interview with the screenwriters who said at one point they're trying to figure out how this character died. And they went over the book, and they went over the book, and they went over the book, and they couldn't figure it out. So they ended up getting a hold of Dashiell Hammett and going, "How did this character die? We can't figure it out." And Dashiell Hammett's like, "I don't know."
Right.
He's like, "I don't know." He didn't know. That was just how the story worked. That wasn't what was the point of the story. It was a tight plot. You know what I mean?
I have to go back and read Long Halloween because, you know, I read that honestly because Tim Sale's art is so beautiful.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's great. And it's a great Batman noir story, and, you know, that's right.
I think that's what you got to take it for. It is plot-wise, it's a mess of a book. It's all over the place, and, but to me, I just look at it like a noir movie.
It's all over the place, and there's things that like don't get resolved, and you're kind of like, well, then why was that guy in that scene? I don't, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's all about mood and atmosphere, and I think that's what Loeb does is that he does write to whoever he's working with. If it's Tim Sale, he's going to have a lot of, you know, whether it be Superman for All Seasons where it was big, you know, Norman Rockwell shit, or whether it's Ed McGuinness
and it's going to be like big punches to the face.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, as long as we're talking about Batman, there's something that's been bugging me for a month now.
I haven't gone back and reread this see if you're right, but go ahead.
I read it again just to make sure I wasn't.
And you were right.
I didn't make it up, but okay. The latest Detective Comics, Scott Snyder wrote it. Jacques did the art on it, and everybody's been raving about it. It's just been.
Can we just call him Jacques?
Jacques. Yeah, whatever. Is it Jacques? I don't know.
Or is it Jacques?
Well, he's not French, right?
I think it's just a made-up name, right?
It's Yoke.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, okay, so everybody's been raving about this book. Like, it looked five stars, it looked awesome. And it's a perfect book. And all.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know if it's a perfect book.
I'm just saying what people have been saying about it on the internet, not that people ever, you know.
There's no hyperbole on the internet.
But when I read it, it was funny that, and I haven't heard anybody say this, but it was really weird to me. There was a strange hole in the story for me. And as I'm reading the beginning of the story, and now if I can remember it, Dick, as Batman's going and he's... I can't remember how the fucking story starts, but basically what happens, at one point he's talking to a guy and a woman sneaks up on him with a shotgun, shoots the guy in the chest, and then he throws a batarang at her, hits her, and then she jumps out of a window and kills herself. And that sort of sets off the whole story about how it seems like there are, someone is trafficking in like black market goods from Batman's rogues gallery, you know, like the Mad Hatter's thing, and so that's sort of like
fear gas.
So, but anyway, so it's like, so when I read it, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. That seems like Batman would be able to stop her from shooting this guy and then jumping out of a window and killing herself. It seemed really strange. Yeah. But I'm like, oh well, whatever. You know, that's fine.
You know, it's Dick.
It's Dick. Maybe he's not as good as Bruce. I understood it was a point in the story. It was just it was necessary to get the story moving. I have no problem with that. But later on in the story, the almost identical thing happens, and he stops it from happening to him. He's sitting there talking to someone. Woman sneaks up with a gun.
It's a lot of women sneaking up with guns.
No, I'm sorry.
In this book.
He's sitting there sneaking up in a room, and someone sneaks up with a shotgun.
With night vision glasses,
he sees this person like in a mirror, and nonchalantly he just remarks, "Oh, his tech isn't as good as mine." Bam! Next thing you know, he's got the person, you know, tied up, and he's investigating. Then a woman sneaks up with a gun again, and he like tasers her without looking behind his back. So same situation that happened to him, person sneaking up with him,
twice,
he solves almost. As a joke,
I couldn't do it in the beginning of the book.
I did go back and read that
after we had talked. And maybe it wasn't made forcefully enough, but it did make a point that, I mean, it was right there that you know, he's using good tech, but mine is at least twice as bad.
Did he not have that tech in the beginning of the story?
I guess not, because it made such a point that his tech was better. So I don't know, maybe it was pointing out that it was a technological advantage?
Like I said, normally I don't pick things apart like that, but when a book is just so, you know, applauded such huge, and I'm like, hey, I liked it. It was a good Batman story. I dug it, but those two things really stuck out to me, and nobody mentioned it.
Why did people like it so much?
Because it's Jacquard.
It's
not Grant Morrison.
What kind of Batman have we had for the last 2 years?
Weird one.
Yeah.
Now we have in Detective Comics. Oh my God, it's a detective story.
I completely understand. And believe me.
Well, it's a linear story.
I'm the first one to
And I've liked Morrison's Batman. I've liked certain parts of it. It just seemed really strange to me
that nobody's mentioned that.
Well, the thing about you. And
I'm an asshole?
Well, no, you look at things and it's one of the things I love about you and hate about you.
Oh, is that a strong word?
Well, yeah, but
dislike?
Yeah.
No, I think it's hate.
Okay. It's hate. It boils up.
All right.
You look at things from a writing perspective with such a writer's eye that things that I usually will gloss over, like a lot of people do, we just talked about The Long Halloween. Yeah. A lot of people say, oh, it looks cool and it's a noir story and, oh, hey, you know, screw it. But you look at things like a writer, and whenever you point it out, I don't see it until you point it out, and then it's like Tom Caters. It's our Tom Caters appreciation moment. Whenever he pointed out...
We have to have one. Legally, we have to have one every episode.
Whenever he pointed out the usage of the phone in The Walking Dead,
right?
That is the only time that actual reality is breached in that show or in the comic, that everything about The Walking Dead is about reality. Everything is real. And as soon as we saw Laurie's voice coming out of the phone that Rick was talking on, That's the only time that that book has ever veered from the path of reality, of that what it set up.
Except for The Walking Dead.
Well, suspension of disbelief there. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But you know, on the premise that The Walking Dead are real in that book.
No, Tom has the ability to look at things on an emotional level. And now
I hate that goddamn phone.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I
see just that phone is just a symbol that he's really gone over the
deep end. That's fine. Don't show her conversation on the other side of it then.
Well, why not? We see.
Because you can't, you shouldn't be able
because
to hear
at no
it.
Other point in The Walking Dead, there's never, it's really cinematic. There's never a point in The Walking Dead where you get like captions and it's like, here's what Rick is thinking about. Here's his inner monologue. You never get inside his mind. You're always just observing from outside. And that's the only instance. And I mean, it
would be like
choice,
in the TV show if you actually heard her voice. And it's like, oh shit, that's Lori on the other side of the phone.
See, to me, it just is a matter of and maybe it could have been handled better, I suppose, but Tom, like you said, it's a matter of showing, you know, how he is snapped. He's not in touch with reality anymore.
As a writer, tell me, and Kirkman's a good writer, tell me that you as a writer wouldn't be able to, through Rick's half of the conversation, be able to get the same effect.
Well, I think you could, but I don't know that it's necessary. I think you would have to write more to do it, and to what...
And I think if it would feel, I think you got to look at, you know, the medium. I think, say they get to that point in the TV show or whatever, it would be way harder to pull that off and make it feel like it's all in Rick's head if you were on TV. If you could actually hear the other side, you know, does her voice have a little bit of soft speaker noise because it's supposed to be on a phone, whatever, you know, like.
Yeah, but that would be a fantastic scene in that TV show of him picking up a phone with no cord and hearing her voice. That they're going to absolutely do that in the TV show, and it's going to be a great scene because it's really going to show
if
how fucking nuts he is.
Spoilers.
No, but I think that with an issue like that, if Kirkman does that in the comic, and it does breach the reality or whatever that you accept to have in the story, if he can control that one element, if it doesn't spin out and there's more and more and more more and more people freaking out and seeing those things come through, but if it's one choice to show that one thing, if he can keep a hand on that, I think it's okay to do it. It's risk, but I think he can.
Well,
he can do
I mean,
it.
You could say like with the show like Battlestar Galactica, where you have one character who's, you know, Baltar was hallucinating constantly, or was he?
Right.
Like, was he seeing?
Yeah, what you never. Yeah, that's a
that
great
was
part
unresolved.
Of it.
And with Rick, maybe he puts in the dialogue so you can say like Chris, it's like, oh, well, that's where it jumps it because it's too much occult or magic, and I'm seeing it as more like, no, he's just he's lost a hand. You know,
he has cracked.
He's gone.
It's broken with the reality because he has broken with the reality.
Okay. Yeah.
To me, that's. I mean, I kind of get Tom's point, but it doesn't bother me as much as it seems to bother Tom
because Tom made me hate the phone.
Well, that's hey, you know,
and now,
you're very
and,
easily
and,
manipulated.
And I know, and now I hate now I hate Batman's night vision goggles.
Well, I mean, once
no, you shouldn't hate Batman's.
The bring this full circle, I say on the Batman thing,
they're
I'd
very
say
good
that
tech though.
You know, the one thing in a lot of books these days, when they start, you'll see a lot of hype and a lot of attention drawn on the first issue of anything. Oh, it was amazing. Oh, it was going to be good. But most of these stories that anyone tells, it's going to take 5 or 6 issues because really they write them for the unit of story or whatever is one arc or whatever. And I think that Scott Snyder, one thing he's talked up a lot, and he's a guy that comes from writing prose and writing, you know, he's written genre fiction. I don't know if he's done
a
lot of...
Is he a prose writer?
Yeah, he's a prose writer first. And I don't know if he's... I don't think a lot of his stuff has been detective stuff per se, but I think that if you're working in a thing where, okay, we've got this detective comic story, and it works in a lot of ways, like any detective story, you know, there somebody gets murdered, you know, there's trafficking or whatever, and... There are a lot of little details I noticed as I was going through, you know. Like, I kept wondering, you know, what in the fuck is going on with all the birds? You know, there's all these birds
where
showing
are these
up in all
ravens
these panels.
From?
You know, but like, there is some explanation. It's been a couple weeks since I read that issue, but there's some explanation in terms of, oh, you know, the birds got out of the aviary or whatever. But it's not like it's just this innocuous detail. You assume that that's going to pay off in the story. At some point, the birds being in all there, not just thematically, plot, they're going to have a reason. Maybe something with his technology versus the villain's technology.
Maybe it will.
I'm sensing a penguin tie-in.
It was just, like I said, it wouldn't have... the first scene where it happens, it was just really weird because it was just like... My first thought was like, wow, I wouldn't think that Batman would Like normally, you wouldn't see Batman fail in that.
Get yeah. punked that way.
Yeah, get fucked. You know, get like, oh, Jesus! You just shot my suspect, and you just killed yourself. Like it was like, oh, nice job, Batman. Good
double,
work.
Double fail,
yeah,
Dick.
Yeah, nice. Good job, Dick.
But imagine if that was an opening scene of any James Bond movie. Like, oh crap!
But because, like you said, it's a detective story, and detective stories have to work in a certain way. There has to be something to set the story forward. Set it in motion. And I was fine with that until it got to the point where almost the identical thing happens later.
If they had done
and he so
other
nonchalantly
way,
yeah. just takes care of it. And it's just like, wow, that just is such a contradiction in the story. And not in like, oh, well, that, you know, Batman wouldn't, you know, I mean, not that kind of thing, but just like in that actual context of that story, it was such a contradiction.
Yeah, the exact same thing.
Yeah,
almost
it's like do anything
again,
else and I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't even have thought about it again.
I still think that people are lauding it the way that they are, because it's like, oh, thank God.
Jacques is one thing. I mean,
oh,
he's
God,
awesome.
He's so good.
I mean, yeah, I hope he draws Batman And
but it's a detective story.
It was good. Yeah. I liked it. It was just an interesting.
Is that Norton leaving? Was Norton leaving?
He'll be back.
Oh, okay.
He'll be back.
I got a bottle of. I got a Christmas
he's
present for him.
You know. Well, speaking of The Walking Dead, I guess they fired their whole writing staff.
Well,
that was kinda
okay. Now I heard there's. Let's go to the news editor.
The news editor.
To the news desk. I hear that that Kirkman kind of clarified that it wasn't firing as much as rehiring.
This is why you can't trust anything you read on the internet. And I'm saying this is a guy who writes shit to be read on the internet. But you know the original story that broke that said that these people aren't on the show anymore was on the site Deadline.com. And Deadline is like this site that, you know, their stock and trade is
TMZ-ish,
but for the behind the scenes stuff, who's getting signed for a movie? Why is this director quit? It's all the business side of Hollywood with that. But you know, they run a lot of the time with unsourced stories. You know, we've heard this and we know it's true, and we're running it as fact. And a lot of the time, I'd say they're 90% right when they say we know this is going to be true. But a lot of times, they'll announce something and it won't be official for 2 months because somebody hasn't signed the contract or whatever. Yeah. So they came out and said, hey, you know, two of the writers on the staff have been fired and this is what it is. And then and that spread everywhere. And then slowly as kind of, you know, some of this could be damage control, some of this could be the truth coming out, but everybody from Kirkman to Darabont to Gail Ann Hurd, who's the executive producer, came out and they were like, look, no, you know, the one thing I heard that I guess sounded the most plausible, if you want to believe, you know, the studio, is that when Frank Darabont set up the show, he originally had conceived, I'm going to write the pilot, I'm going to direct it, and I'm going to hand it off to this other guy, and he'll be the showrunner. And then Darabont got into it and really enjoyed it and said, I want to run this. And the guy's like,
Do you think the gigantic ratings had anything to do with it?
I'm sure the gigantic ratings had a lot to do with it. But, you know, but
8.1 what?
But well, if he says, I want to do this, the other guys are like, well, fuck, I guess, you know, like, I don't want to do it. Now, who knows? Maybe Frank Darabont was like, so you can't stick around. And the guy was like, so I opt not to stick around. But it's not like they were like, hey, you guys all did a great job. Get out.
Yeah.
Which is what you think when you hear, fired. You know, the writers of the hit show that had X many million viewers. Done, you know, but so it
especially after like six episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you didn't even get a whole full season to say you're good or you're bad.
What is it? It's a half season.
It's a half season.
It was a trial.
No, it's like a quarter season. It's like
network
television is what 22 episodes.
It's a half cable network. Yeah, most cable
shows. Yeah,
are you know? 10,
I'm just getting into it. It's six episodes. It's like, oh fuck, now I
gotta. I love this. It's very British.
Oh, yeah, it is.
No, the
is
British
the
are three episodes that are hour and a half long each. What? It's
oh,
like,
Sherlock.
Yeah,
those are like, you know, Father Dowie
or like Prime Suspect or something like that.
Which is great if they're good, but if the second Sherlock episode, which isn't so good.
But the third one's awesome.
I haven't watched the third one yet. First one's phenomenal. Second one, not so good, and it's an hour and a half of not so good.
The third one will blow your socks off. But back on Walking Dead real quickly, it's one of the things that we had talked about is that, you know, love the effects, love the concept. The writing in the first six issues could have could have been a little bit tighter by AMC standards.
Well, that was my biggest thing was that, I, you know, comparing it, and unfairly so, if you compare it to Mad Men or Breaking Bad, it didn't hold up. In the writing of it. It just wasn't to the quality of those two shows. I absolutely love both those shows. I think they're some of the best written television out there.
Oh, sure.
And so to me, it just didn't live up to that standard. It's unfair. But that's what I was expecting with Frank Darabont.
If it was on USA,
AMC.
If it was on USA or TNT.
If it was on NBC. Yeah. But for it coming on AMC and you know, the big hoopla of it coming and everything, I was expecting more from it. Now, I still enjoyed it. I watched every episode. I'm going to watch every episode. Yeah. I thought it was very good.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
But I don't think it was. It didn't have the character. It didn't have the character stuff of those shows that those shows have. I mean, those shows are much more character driven shows. But I mean, like Breaking Bad is there's tons of action. There's tons of things going on in that show. And
there's
you still have amazing character
there's
development.
There's more. My God, I can't believe they actually did that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Where in The Walking Dead, that should be natural. And I don't think that they've got, you know, and they, you know okay. Maybe it's because they read the book.
Kill Amy,
I don't know. And so, yeah.
I think that's probably the thing. If there was a Mad Men book or, you know, or a Breaking Bad book that came out first,
right,
we'd probably all love it. And then be like, oh, well, like when they're making the series, I don't like that change that they did, or they're bringing this up slowly.
But I think that a lot if I have an issue with The Walking Dead, and maybe it's because I have friends, I have one friend in particular named Sean T. Collins, who's like a horror hound. I mean, he really knows horror well on a really intellectual level. And he kind of pointed out that, you know, what Walking Dead did as a comic was it used the traditional zombie setup, but it was like, all right, we're not going to do all the stuff you normally see. And I think a lot of what they injected back into the show was, oh, they go to the, you know, the Centers for Disease Control. There's a guy there and he's drunk and he's the last man left and we don't know what caused it. I mean, they used a lot more of the expected tropes of a zombie movie in the first six episodes. So it felt a little different. Not just that it was different from the comic, but it felt more like some stuff we'd already seen.
Yeah, like any Romero film or The Stand. You know,
And yet, at the same time, I think they kind of let down on some of that stuff. I mean, like that last episode, you know, the thing that disappointed me about it was that at one point I'm sitting there thinking, you know, oh, well, maybe there's a chance Glenn and what's her name? Glenn.
Andrea?
Or not Glenn, Dale and
Andrea.
Andrea die. Maybe there's a chance, but then, you know, 2 minutes into it, they're seeing it's like,
As soon as Dale stayed, I was like, he's going to convince her to come out.
And the only person that dies in the show is someone that isn't a character from the books and someone that chooses to stay.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like you really missed an opportunity there to say, no one is safe.
This is going to be different.
No one is safe. And that's what that show needs to be to me is like, no one is ever
safe.
I'm
glad they didn't kill Andrea because she's...
Well, no, I understand that's fine.
She's one of my favorite characters in the TV show and the comic.
But at the same time, the person that did die of the group
was expected
chose to die. Yeah. And yes, was only expected by us because we read the book. Yeah. But she chose to stay there and die. She didn't die. You know, it wasn't a dangerous situation. It wasn't you know, something where you went, holy shit, I can't believe that. If that building would have exploded and all of a sudden Shane had a, you know, 2x4 sticking through his chest and that's how the season ended,
right,
you would have been like, holy fuck, you know, I can't believe that's not how they did it. Yeah, well, not only that, but just thinking of it outside of the book as just a television show, it's like, you know, if you hadn't read the book, even then, it seems like, oh, well, this isn't really that.
I think part of that is six episodes, too.
I agree with that.
They haven't been able, and they really want to make viewers who know shit all about the comic, they want to make them care about these people as people before they pull the rug out.
Yeah, I was reading an article in Entertainment Weekly about that, and they were talking to Darabont and those guys, and they were like, yeah, we're not going to set it up with the what everyone expects to happen for the natural cliffhanger, specifically because of they're talking about six.
Shane. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, with Shane, and because you know you're kind of like that'll be this season's, you know, they'll gack him and that'll be it, and it's like, and they're like, not in six episodes. We haven't, you haven't got enough.
He's not.
You don't care enough about any of these characters yet to miss them when it happens, so the impact isn't there.
But I will give him credit. I thought a couple of things in that last episode they did well is that one, they didn't really get too involved in explaining what the zombies are.
I hope they never.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
They never did that.
I'm so glad they didn't.
And there was kind of a fear that they would. That's what they're going to go there, and all of a sudden it's like he's going to know. And the other thing was like that guy was just some dude. He wasn't. Yeah, he's like I kind of like that fact that he wasn't like some brilliant scientist that just happens to, you know.
The only thing they did in the TV show that they haven't done in the comic series is that they definitely clarified that it's worldwide. They said that the French were the last to hold out. And in the comic, we don't know how widespread it is. Well, in the TV show, now we know it's worldwide.
Right.
So
that's the thing about the comic, too, in the end, is that most zombie movies, even though zombie movies at their core are... There are certain things, but in the end, because you want to resolve something, they become about the quest for the cure or the last-minute save or, in some way, some kind of natural order being reestablished. The Walking Dead is a comic because it goes and goes. It's not. It's about survival. You know, like the question in the comic has never been, how does it start? How do we fix it? How do we reestablish society?
How long are you going to last?
Yeah. That's all it is survival.
Who's going to last the longest?
I've talked about it on the other podcast, 11 o'clock. If you guys like the whole zombie.
You mean that lovely podcast of 10 minutes of you guys dropping off of Skype?
Oh, God. Jesus.
Vince could have edited that.
No, that's all Vince. He's just like, I'm leaving it in. It's real.
No,
I'm like,
verite.
Vince, sometimes it doesn't need to be that fucking
it's
real.
Sometimes reality sucks, Vince.
Yeah. Jesus. It's like, no. That's whenever you come in and say, due to technical difficulties, we're going to jump to this part of the show.
I was laughing.
You don't even have to say that. You can just have a jump and just be like, magic. There you go.
I actually enjoyed it because I was laughing the whole time.
It's like college radio where there's just like dead air.
Yeah. You know? It's like it would be the equivalent here of, you know, like Kyle getting up and walking out, you know?
Fuck this.
28 Days Later. Did you guys read that?
Yeah. I read it for a little while, but now I read I bought the first couple of issues and then I kind of stopped because I was going to pick it up in trades.
I'm getting really, really close to liking that as much, if not more, than Walking Dead.
No,
maybe it's just it's a freshness to it and seeing where these characters go. But it continues
a
to
really
be
good,
so good
zombie book. It's not a comic, but it's Max Brooks's
The World War Z.
That's gonna.
It's a great audiobook too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Although I don't
Henry Rollins.
The problem I have with that though is it's so abridged though, because there's a lot of chapters in there. Like there's whole one on a Chinese submarine. That like is totally out of
that's
there.
Cool.
There's another one with they would use dogs. Like they had dog troopers and they would use dogs to lure out zombies. And there's a whole passage in there about how the guys get so emotionally attached to their dogs that like if they go down, these guys are emotionally wrecked because it's like losing a partner in the field.
That's a great idea for a book.
It goes from patient zero all the way to the end, and it charts. And
that's a great idea for a story, a zombie submarine.
I mean, it's like the
zombies
like,
in a submarine. Oh hell
well,
yeah!
I mean, there's nowhere to run.
There's a great story about how like they're this is afterwards, and they're sort of rebuilding society. And there's one story about these guys who are underwater divers. They have to go in these huge, like, zombie-proof suits because they're these zombies walking around the ocean because they got pushed off of freighters and all these other things.
Yeah.
So
well,
literally, these guys are down there, like arc welding pipelines and stuff like that. Meanwhile, you have this crawler thing coming after you. And it's, I mean, and there's, so it's like, I mean, he really thought of, like, all these different weird scenarios that you're like, what if I was an underwater deep-sea diver and I have this zombie horde coming at me?
That whole bunch just like, what if, you know, but
he sets it up in a premise that doesn't seem that
unbelievable. Absolutely. I mean, the way he...
And the way it's all like letters from guys who did these jobs or survived and like, this is what I did and I was a soldier or I was a radio operator and, you know.
I like the one where it's I think it was when Times Square gets just completely nuked and the one guy's just like, you know, he's a grunt, and he's just like, it was completely fucked up from the beginning. Oh, and he's just like telling all how everything's just
and that's,
blah,
and that's Mark Hamill narrating on the audiobook, and he's like, Hamill. Land Warrior, that sucks. You know,
Who's narrating that?
It's Mark Hamill, because I have that audiobook. I listened to it on one of my drives, and he's talking about, like, we had all these fucking weapons that suck, because shock and awe, it doesn't work against the Walking Dead. They don't care.
It was great.
And you blow them in half, they're still fucking alive.
It's like all our weapons don't do anything, and he's like, you know, and Alan Alda has a great bit because he's this, you know, this guy who
he's still awesome.
He rebuilds like he's one
just
of the
on, 30 Rock.
Yeah, he's one of these organizers who has to rebuild the infrastructure.
Right,
spends this whole bit talking about how all these old generals want like stealth bombers, and he's like, what is a stealth bomber going to do against the zombies? It's like, we need farming. That is what we need. You know.
Well, that's the thing, though. But, I mean, the thing that he did so well in the book was the concepts behind it and how things played out.
Yeah.
You could imagine that of going, that's exactly how these fucking idiots would handle things. That's exactly how, fucked up.
Yeah, you're fighting a war against, using the tactics of last war.
Right.
And, you're not learning anything. And it's the whole shock and awe.
We need bows and arrows,
Like a headshot kill, and you have to, like, decapitate him or whatever.
Boy, they put out a couple years ago some concept art for the movie on that.
Is that still
God, I hope so, because the concept art, I was just like, oh, hell yes.
He was giving away copies, I think, at C2E2 this year.
Yeah, I've gone to two conventions that he's been at, and I've never met him, and I've always wanted to. He just kind of seems like a pretty cool guy.
I've just standed by in the corner and just kind of stared at him and went, oh, Max Brooks.
What was your father really like? You know? tell me about your dad. Come on. World War Z is a lot like the episode of The Walking Dead where they take the dead bodies of the dead and they put them all over themselves. Like, it has that problem solving of, like, well, how do the dead distinguish between us and them?
There's a lot more of the science behind it.
And more of the common sense. It's not really that science. It's more of just, like, if you were kind of in that scenario, you follow the logical train and say...
Still the creepiest ass thing I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
TV is them walking down the street covered in zombie goo and just...
Zombie goo.
And just...
With, like, hands tied to them and stuff.
Oh, God. And then when that one... And you pegged it. Whenever the one zombie looks at Glenn, and Glenn's like, oh, fuck. And you'd said it would have been so much creepier if the zombie had just reached out and put its hand on his shoulder just to see... And to see if he would have been able to keep it together.
Well, that's what I wanted. That's what I really wanted to see. It was like that tension of Glenn. Is he going to freak out? When is he going to freak out? Yeah. And they just didn't play that long enough.
It's like that Saving Private Ryan moment where the guy's in the stairwell.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, get the fuck up and get the gun.
I mean, that would have been because that you're just waiting for Glenn to just piss himself and run screaming. And it's like, can he hold it together? Can he hold it together? And they just didn't play it out long enough. For me, I just thought, oh, that's such a great moment that they just didn't.
I was creeped out. I would have had a goddamn heart attack.
Whole show, it was good. There were just all these little things that I thought they could have done that much better
pushed
to make it.
Just pushed it right
make
over
it that much. Yeah.
Well, hey, we are sitting in the Rogues Gallery at Challengers Comics Conversation.
Surrounded by beautiful Amy Reeder art.
Yeah, it's pages from
Madame Xanadu,
Batwoman. And Batwoman. Some beautiful Batwoman covers here. The Batwoman Zero.
I love the fact that we're recording from a place called the Rogues Gallery. That's so nice. That's just nice that we can say
any minute. Dr. Light or the Penguin will bust in.
No, it's Rogues. It's got to be like Captain Boomerang.
This should really be a bar, though, like just a old kind of pub.
Talking like me now.
So long as they bring a cheese tray.
Did you all read Batwoman Zero?
Yes.
I bought it, but I haven't had time.
That's okay.
Spoil away, though.
You already talked about that on your other podcast.
I really enjoyed it. I was skeptical because Greg isn't involved with it anymore.
Right.
Because he created
this character, right?
Yeah, he basically has kind of done the
Did he create this character?
I don't know.
It was in 52, and you know, with 52, it's hard to tell who did what. Although I think everybody assumed that it was Greg's person, Alex Ross did the original design. So I mean, it's not like the traditional I write the story and somebody draws the interior creation. But I mean, Greg is mostly responsible for the personality, I'd say.
Yeah.
What do they say? It's like success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. You know, it's like in Hollywood, like every movie has a whole list of people that, like, I
really enjoyed the detective run, the Elegy story, but Sal and I have talked
about... Elegy, by the way?
Elegy is the... Yeah.
I'm not saying it isn't.
Yeah, that's the name of the arc.
For some reason, I want to call it, like...
Banana.
Yes, banana. I don't know why I want to pronounce that differently. I'm not even sure how, but for some reason, I want to pronounce it Elegy. Elegy?
Elegy. Yes, the storyline Elegy.
That really works well. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stories from the last couple of years. A friend borrowed that we had gotten into a conversation about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I was like, you know what? There's a comic book I'm going to let you borrow. And so I'm waiting to hear back from them.
Which, thankfully, to the Senate, will still be around for a while.
Oh, fuckers. Jesus. But we've talked about this a little bit off and on that I'm ready for this character to just get going. They've had the nice detective run, but, you know, damn it, tell some fucking stories. We have, like, two Batwoman stories now. Yeah. And this is after, like, 4 years. years of talking about and teasing
and also a lot of stuff going on in the background. I mean, you had what was going on at 52, which she was on the periphery of. Then you had that Crime Bible miniseries, which dealt with a lot of who became the villains. Yeah. Cool book, yeah. But I mean, but it didn't ever really.
Yeah, but she was so on the side of that. I mean, that was a question story.
Yeah.
I think I just don't have any opinion about Batwoman. I have no interest in
her. I think probably the thing, too, is, like, don't forget, like, when they introduced this new iteration of Batwoman, you know, they were playing up more of the sort of lesbian angle, or at least it got sort of more. It got picked up. That angle got picked up
in the press.
Well, no, I mean, that defining.
Yeah, it got picked up, and then people ran with that, and then it kind of gets, like, hidden for, you know, what type of adventure story it's going to be, and then you're like, oh, you know. So it.
Yeah, I'm ready for some. You know, what I like about Batwoman as a character is that she's not the traditional detective, like, you know, Batman Detective Comics. She is, you know, a military brat, and it's military training, and so it's going to be more black ops than detective stories.
I think one of the things that really brought out that made that Detective Comics run so great, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I think I've read almost every comic that Greg Ruck has done. I've read a lot of the
one shot
stuff. That's a lot of stuff. I mean, maybe there's a few shows like Wolverine that I didn't read when he was doing Marvel stuff, but you know, he does have his own the Greg Rucka archetype. You know,
that
fits into a lot of his stories in that. And in certain ways, I think Batwoman fits to that. But one of the ways in which it breaks out, you know, there's the military stuff there. There's the independent woman there, and things like that that he always plays with in one shape or another, even though the personalities are a little different. But what made that run so different was that there was this weird goth Lolita villain who had an army of werewolves and you didn't know what side.
Yeah.
I mean, like this
absolutely.
Weird
no,
shit
I absolutely agree with
built
you.
Around the concept and the story that made it feel different than reading another Sacha Bordeaux arc or something like
to
that.
To me, it was like Greg working in 52 so closely with Morrison.
Yeah.
It rubbed off on him for that, and that was sort of like...
You need to have some fucked up monsters in the story.
Yeah, something like that.
I think a part of that, and I don't know, because you can never tell in the collaboration because you're just getting the final product, but I think some of that can be ascribed to J.H. Williams. You know, I think,
the design elements and how the
characters looked really gave a different feel to that. And so who knows? It's going to be interesting, I think, with this new book to see what his half of the interest was, you know, where he wants to take, what elements appeal to him most, and where it'll go in its own series.
Well, you know, I just see her as, like Chris said, like she's a black ops agent, you know. I mean, and that's one of the things I think my girlfriend reads the book a lot. She really loves it. I read it a lot. I enjoy it. And I like the fact that, like, she has tech support. I mean, Batman kind of goes out there by himself, and he's just awesome. No, but I mean, Alfred isn't on the computer going, oh, in the stairwell, there's three guards, you know, left, right, 3 o'clock, right. You know, down.
It's not
center.
A military operation.
Yeah, whereas, like, Batman. She really is. She's coming from that training. She has her father, who's basically being tech support and after-action reports and, you know, those sort of elements. And I think that's what a modern vigilante almost needs today.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it is, you know, made a point of using, you know, very modern tech. It's not the Batcave. I mean, it's...
Well,
it's,
I think that's just the shit Greg likes. He loves playing with that shit.
That's, I guess, more than anything, the thing that throws me out of stories like that is I don't want to... You know, the one thing that... a book I liked, but it was so hard to read, was Checkmate by him. Because it was like, all right, there's all this military jargon. There's all this, you know, we're on 8012 clicks from the whatever and all this computer bullshit, you know? And it's like, okay, whatever. I don't really need that. Yeah. You know, I can watch a Michael Bay military movie where they're like, shoot the motherfucker.
But that...
anybody that's listening to the show knows
I love Checkmate.
Yeah, that Chris is... huge fan of Greg's stuff. And I was like, today I told him, like, God, I just wish Greg wrote crime mysteries instead of
espionage.
Because I love Greg and I think he's a great writer, but I hate espionage. I just am not that I hate it, but I'm just not into it anymore.
But I mean, I think that's the fun of what he's doing with, like, Batman, because, like, we were talking about, you said, like, if you don't like that espionage aspect, you can then have a villain and a psychotic villain with an army of werewolves and shape changers and stuff to come in, or some other Batman rogues gallery guy.
Well, did you like his Gotham Central stuff? Because it was more, you know, crime procedural.
I did, but I'm not a huge crime procedural guy either.
Okay.
I mean, crime, as far as crime stuff goes, I like
more hard-boiled
sort of
noir.
Just detective stuff. I like more detective. I'm not a big crime procedural guy. I've never been into
Hill
cop
Street
shows.
Blues. Yeah.
No, I never watched Hill Street Blues.
What are you snickering at?
The only cop show...
Hill Street Blues is like, now, you know, you be careful out there. Yeah. That's all I remember about that show.
Cop shows that I've really liked, and that was The Wire and The Shield.
That's I like Barney Miller.
Barney
Miller is fucking awesome. The Wire is the greatest TV show.
I like detective stories. I like, you know, that's what I like. I mean, as far as that stuff goes.
His latest novel, The Last Run, is kind of what I consider the last part of Queen and Country Volume 1. If you look at Tara Chase as a character, this is... mild spoilers. This is basically at the beginning, you know, Queen and Country, the first arc was her as the minder number two, and through what, 7, 8 whatever volumes or arcs, plus the declassifieds, and now three novels, she's now become the DOps, the director.
Yeah, she's like a handler operations. More than an actual.
No, she's DOps. She's head of special head of special section. She is director of operations, and I'm thinking about this the whole path that this character has taken, and you know, it's no secret Queen and Country is probably my favorite comic and one of my favorite works of fiction now, especially now that it has these three fantastic novels that have really opened it up and gotten into it. But man, you want to, the one thing that I love about his work is that whenever I read it and there's stuff that is so out there that normally I would be like, there's no fucking way that could happen. I know that he has researched it to the nth degree, and yes, it either has happened or it could happen, because there's stuff that goes on in this novel that is just like, holy shit. But if you're a Q&C fan, obviously.
Yeah, my girlfriend read the first two. She hasn't read that one yet. I bought her the first two because she really likes thriller novels and stuff like that. Yeah. And then all the time we'll watch them on TV and she'll be like, this is just like that Greg Rucka book. Like, she's always pointing out whenever there's some weird international terrorism story how much it lines up.
Yeah. I just get every story is like The Wire. That's what I get from things. Like The Wire does.
Well, you know, the first Queen and Country novel, Gentleman's Game, it was a big part of that book was bombings in the London tube system, and like a month after the book came out, were the bombings in the London tube. And the first time I ever talked to him, I was like, "Did that freak you out?" And he's like, he said, well, you know, paraphrasing, he's like, you know, I feel horrible about it, but the first thought in my mind was not about the people in London that I know and about their safety.
You cold bastard.
But it was, oh my God, I hope I didn't give them the idea.
You know? Well, wasn't that part of the comics code back in the day that, like, none of the stories could actually be, like, plausible, could actually be done, be given them ideas? Like,
and you couldn't shoot smack.
Well, yeah, like, you couldn't show the law being wrong. You couldn't show, like, you know...
Catholic priests touching little...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good had to always just triumph somehow.
But except for Nazis.
You could like, for example, like, if you were going to do a crime, you wouldn't do it in a way that would be imitatable. Like, nowadays, we worry about the kids are going to imitate certain activities, and like it in, I know there was a thing in the code in the 50s where it was like it couldn't be like, that's why Superman had to fight robots. He couldn't do like a street levels like bank heist, because if you gave away too much information, they were afraid maybe that somebody would knock over a bank.
How you rob a bank, kids.
I mean, my favorite thing ever from the comics, I think it was just that they were censoring so much of everything then that it was like, if you even try to think of anything plausible, like, I mean, the one thing, I don't remember where I read this, but it was an issue of Plastic Man, and somehow a guy had been turned into water, and then in the end, Doibe Dickles accidentally drank the pitcher of water that was the guy. And Plastic Man was like, Doibe Dickles, how did you do? And then he was like, but they had to change the word balloon, and I've seen like a photostat of like the original black and white art, and then like the color finished, and they were like, I knocked this pitcher over instead of I drank it, because like, no, it's cannibalism. You can't do that. You know? It's like the most implausible thing, but it counts as cannibalism. If
Is that
cannibalism?
Apparently.
Well, no.
It turns into water and you drink it.
Even today, I have the...
You're consuming an episode of Futurama.
Yeah. I think it all started when Kirby did that detailed drawing of how to build a nuclear bomb.
Speaking of Comics Code, have you guys had a chance to watch the DC 75-year documentary?
No, the one that Ryan Reynolds does the narration for?
Yes.
No. Where can you watch it?
It just came out on DVD a couple weeks ago.
It's out on DVD.
A former boss of mine was one of the co-producers on that.
Oh,
want to check it out.
It's really good. It is, you know, it's obviously, you know, produced and everything by DC. So it is, it's DC.
The official.
It's, yeah, it's, Homer. It's DC's documentary about right. their history. And so you get a lot of Homerism, but it's still good. It still talks about the Comics Code. Yeah, I mean, it really takes them from, you know, Simon and Schuster, and does talk about that, you know, and a little bit about the, you know, the legalities of that kind of stuff, and then all the way through the Comics Code, and brings it up, you know, very, very much to modern day comics. So I don't think it's the hard hitting, you know, 60-minute style documentary that you know that some fans may want, but no, for a brief, you know, hour and a half instructional video on the history of DC Comics, it was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, was there stuff, I guess, that you learned in there that you didn't know, having read all this shit your whole life?
Or? No, I think it was something that, you know, if my wife would ever watch anything like that, which she's never going to, would be like, honey, sit down and let's learn about DC Comics. And she would be like, oh, that's very interesting. It's like, you know, I know that Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill were really pushing the envelope against the code in the 1970s. Yeah. And, you know, I know that whenever they reinvented the Flash and kind of ushered in the Silver Age, I mean, it goes into that stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice. It's informative. For uber dorks like us, it's probably not going to reveal a whole lot of stuff, but for I think a lot of, you know, average comic fans and people certainly that are interested in like all the movies and that kind of stuff, to see a little bit of the history of DC, I think it could be, you know, entertaining.
But sort of along with you know, getting back sort of like with the code, there's a book from the Batman animated series.
I think it's called Batman Animated, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's that big book. And in that, it has page.
It's a fucking tome.
Oh, it's a beautiful book. All their storyboards.
You can kill someone with that book.
And but in it, it has one page of all the things that the censors wouldn't allow them to do and say, like in one big collage of like. Like apparently, like the Catwoman designs, like they had to like alter her costume so it didn't look like she was naked in the line art.
She can't have a moose knuckle.
Yeah,
and I'm afraid.
No, like, no, what was it like? There's a sequence where he's caught the Mad Hatter, and Batman has got to make a quip about sending him. Like, oh, I think the initial line is like sending him to the booby hatch. and they're like, you can't say that.
There's no booby hatch.
So
boobies.
And you couldn't.
What is a booby hatch?
I imagine where that's where the dodo is hanging.
If you guys ever seen the Hudsucker Proxy?
Yes.
They send him off to the psycho sanatorium. The booby hatch.
And there was another one, like they couldn't punch anybody like in the face, or no, it was like. Oh, you couldn't show anybody doing drugs. That was one. Yeah. That's a big one.
That was a big one.
Because it was a children's show. And
I know they cut out of, and they just recently reprinted the Superman Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And they cut out the scene where they compared penis length. Yeah. I remember that was a big
Superman lost, of course. You know.
Who was the first? You know, I always get confused on this one, not the penis length, the drug thing. was it Marvel or DC that did the drug issue first?
It's Spider-Man.
Okay, it was the Spider-Man, not the Speedy.
I bought that.
Stan said, fuck you, doing it anyway.
I bought it 2 years ago in a reprint that was like for a while in the 70s, I guess they put out these things. It was two reprint issues. I bought one was the drug story and then one was the death of Gwen Stacy. And it was really weird reading it because like it was silly and in some ways the way they dealt with it was silly, but what was so funny about it was that it was so amazing to me that I read it and they would be like, he's on smack. But they were like referring to like an actual drug that could exist in the real world. Yeah. And I compare it to like how even today we still do things like he's got the mutant growth hormone he's addicted to. Like really, right, like even today people still don't put a lot of actual drugs. You know, they don't say, oh, these, you know, these teen superheroes. I know somebody who smokes pot. You never see them mention that in a book or whatever. And that they did that in the late 60s or whatever, whenever Stan did that, maybe early 70s. But
it was like 1970. I think is the day.
So it still comes off as really like shocking, even by today's standards.
Do they have an hour where Logan can't smoke a cigar?
Yeah, yeah. Actually,
it's fucking retarded.
No, it's funny. I just did a bunch of sketch cards, and you get a whole laundry list of stuff like you can't do. Like you can't show them smoking. You you can't show any Nazi.
He can eviscerate as many people as he wants, but God forbid he has a cigarette.
I mean, obviously, you get things like no nudity, and you're like, well, I figured that was implied, but then you never know. But yeah, then like, you know, smoking. Because you think like Ben Grimm, Nick Fury, you know, Logan. Then you have other things like, you know, no Nazi iconography at all. So like the Red Skull, you just have to draw him as a Red Skull.
I think that's been a thing now that they're just wiping out completely, you know, with the Captain America movie coming.
He needs to punch Nazis.
It's not going
to
happen, dude.
It's going to be, it's going to be what? Hydra, right?
It's going to be Hydra.
It's going to be Hydra.
I'm sick of Nazis, though. I feel like we had this entire conversation last time.
We did. Sick of Nazis.
But they're the ultimate bad guy because everyone hates them.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why they're the most overused bad guy.
Oh, well, you know, it's the Hellboy quote is, these guys were everywhere.
Yeah. And even to the point where Hellboy's like, I'm just sick of fighting them. You know,
going on to a different movie, Rick Veitch's Brat Pack got a director.
Really?
Yeah, if I could pull it up here, it's not coming up.
Wow, we were talking about The Boys on 11 o'clock this week, and I kept trying to bring up Rick Veitch's Brat Pack as certainly.
I can't. That book is so fucked up and so degenerate and just like.
It's so good.
It's like, God, I don't know what they're planning on doing. I have no idea what they're planning on doing with it, but. I mean, if A, they try and do it like it is, it's going to be an R or an NC-17 film, which I can't imagine that any studio is going to try and do.
That says bomb right there.
Except you got Kick-Ass that, you know, that was successful, so maybe they go that route.
Was it?
Yeah, I think Kick-Ass eventually made its stuff back.
Eventually.
Yeah, it made its money, yeah.
You know, I still haven't watched it. I've watched like half of it.
But if they go the other route and just try and make it like a PG movie, it's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I always compare shit like that to whenever they do. You know, like, has there ever been a good movie of a Bret Easton Ellis novel?
No,
not really. And that's, prose. I mean, prose, you can get away with anything. There's no real censorship on books or whatever. But yeah, but even when a studio picks up, you know, that's just the machine, you know. They'll grind up whatever they can in whatever way they can.
The thing that always sort of confuses me with that is like, at some point, when has it become easier to just come up with something else? Or find something? Like, why go out and pay money for something that you're just going to...
Neuter.
Just completely change.
It's like, that was the point.
And, like, bring in writer after writer to try and...
The name recognition. Like, I mean, look at all the movies that come out.
Who the fuck... there's probably 25,000 people in the planet that
most
know that
comic
book.
Fans don't even know that.
There's still this belief, though, that you know, there's this whole thing. I mean, I think I also brought this up last time, but, you know, if you guys ever meet this guy, Jeff Katz.
Quit repeating yourself.
Who, Jeff Katz is this guy who, nice guy, you produced the Wolverine movie, produced Snakes on a Plane, and now has got some production company comic book stuff going on his own. But he always says, like, the number one thing when he worked at... he worked at 20th Century Fox and he worked at New Line. It was like pre-awareness. If anybody knows anything about it beforehand, we've already got a leg up. And it's
well,
buzz.
And
for some reason, still the idea that they have buzz, you know, for some reason, and you can't point at one movie and say this worked for this movie's marketing, but for some reason, people in Hollywood still think that graphic novel is the hot term. If we say it's based on a graphic novel, even if nobody's ever heard of that graphic novel, it's a selling point. And Hollywood continues to believe that, even though Scott Pilgrim, though it was great,
tanked. Yeah, but it didn't. Yeah.
Jonah Hex tanked. The losers tanked. I mean, you know, like, but for some reason, you know, even 30 Days a Night only did okay and got some direct DVD sequels or whatever. But they keep saying, you know, like, graphic novels a selling point for some reason.
I mean, have you seen any?
Well, I guess any audience
DVD
is better than no audience.
Have you seen the sequel?
No, I was going through On Demand the other day and I realized that, like, they did one that was Dark Days, the sequel, right? Yeah. That was on DVD. Then they did some kind of weird miniseries or whatever. Yeah. I saw this on iMan. I didn't know it existed.
Well, if you what was the internet delivery website? The one that
Amazon.
Brubaker,
Crackle.
Crackle had a 30 Days of Night.
Yeah, I saw that.
Miniseries. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Anyone
ever watch that Brubaker Death Angel?
With Zoe Bell?
Yeah, I saw that. It's very good. Yeah. It's a very action-driven, scenario. It's very quick because it's very, you know, the episodes are so short for the web.
Yeah, they're all just written into like scenes.
Yeah, you just go boom, boom,
There's
boom.
There's a lot
boom,
of that
boom.
Stuff on that Crackle. There was what was his name? Seth Green? No, not Seth.
The dude from Married with Children.
Yeah, Bud Bundy.
Oh yeah, David Faustino.
David Faustino. He had a show on there that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was like him and Court Nemec who played Parker Lewis.
Parker Lewis is an awesome show. Parker Lewis is a great show. I don't want to get into.
Well, you know that show was just Ferris Bueller. You know, like that's
it was, but it went way weirder than Ferris Bueller.
Well, it went on a bizarre
I remember for a while, like Parker Lewis is on Fox. And I think ABC tried to have a Ferris Bueller show,
yeah. and Ferris Bueller tanked.
And then Parker Lewis started making fun of the Ferris Bueller show in the show.
Yeah, it's kind of like Tomb Raider. You know, when they first created that property, they wanted to be Indiana Jones Tomb Raider, and they they wanted the game, the video game, to be Indiana Jones Tomb Raider, and that's what it would have been. But the people who own the rights didn't want it to do it, but they already had enough work in the game, so they just reworked the character.
Made her a chick.
And made it a girl, like made it as different from Indiana Jones as they could do.
Right.
So they made it a girl, they made her British, you know, and gave her guns instead of a whip.
It's basically Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big tits instead of a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it worked.
And, you know, that franchise kind of spins off into its own, you know, into its own thing.
Did you guys see Dan Slott telling
a guy to go fuck himself?
Yeah. Oh, God, it was
great. Great.
I normally wouldn't ever get into this kind of like, you know,
thing, internet or anything.
Yeah, but this is so funny. I think it was on
It was on Robot 6.
Yeah, on CBR.
Yeah, he's on CBR.
Yeah, a guy comes on there and he's talking about Spider-Man.
The discussion was, my buddy, who I was mentioning earlier, he's a horror hound, Sean T. Collins, wrote the post for Robot 6. And the funny thing was that I guess the discussion in the thread was, when will Dan Slott eventually leave Amazing Spider-Man to take a better paying gig in Hollywood? And I'm like, of all the people that idiots on the internet would like have a discussion about around that, like, you think Dan Slott is going to, he's going, oh, fuck you, I'm going to Hollywood, I'm Dan Slott, I wrote Ren and Stimpy comics for 10 years or whatever. I mean, seriously, you know, like, what an absurd conversation to have from the beginning.
But then this guy gets on there and he says, oh, it's just a paycheck for Slott. Anyway, he's not a real fan. And Slott comes on. Yeah. Listen what he says. He's like, as a guy who turned down a side job this year for a paycheck that would have been over a third of his yearly income because it would have meant cutting back on his not-so-lucrative comic book writing career and get in the way of working on his Spider-Man dream job, and the guy who slept less than 12 hours over the course of 4 days this week working on a script while he was sick, a guy who finally had to be ordered off of it by his editor to go see a doctor and is still in a good deal of pain today, this is the first time that I've ever said this to somebody over a comic book message board. Go fuck yourself. Seriously, go fuck yourself.
Good for you, Dan.
Good for Dan. That is true. But it does bring up something to me that I've noticed a bit more and more of late, is that there's a lot of comic book creators that are online, obviously, with Twitter and Facebook and just their own boards and whatever else, message boards, that kind of thing, and on podcasts all over the place. We see more and more comic book professionals that are out there. You know who they are. You hear their voices, that kind of thing. And it seems like there's more and more of a backlash from professionals towards fans. Now, I'm not saying this guy didn't get told to go fuck himself, because I would have done the exact same thing. But for Dan Slott, is it better? I mean, for any of these guys,
is it better for him just to walk away?
Just to ignore it from the beginning. Like, don't get involved with that stuff. Don't. No matter what you do, if you're a personality, if you're a comic book creator, say, of any level, at some point, somebody's going to talk shit about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether it's justified or not, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be fair. It's not going to be, you're going to get shit talked about you.
We've talked about it kind of almost from just after the beginning of the
Mike Norton just tells us to go fuck ourselves.
We've talked about it since almost the beginning of this show. I mean, like five and a half years ago, whatever it was. I mean, we were 10 episodes in, and we were talking to industry professionals. The line between fan and industry pro is so paper thin in comics that I think this is a natural byproduct, is that the familiarity and the comfort level that fans have to walk up to someone, you know, the yellow hat guy and Rob Liefeld.
Right.
You know, it's just so easy to say, I hate what you did with Cable. Well, you suck.
I think there's a couple different competing things. I don't think it's just that the level between fan and pro is so thin, because I do think there's a different demarcation between people who are working in the industry and act like professionals and people who are on message boards with the name Jax53982, who comes on and says, hey, I'll say whatever the fuck I want, and I'll say things I can never say in person.
Nothing.
I'm an anonymous. Oh, it doesn't mean anything to me, and I'm not held accountable for this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that, there's a couple different things. I think, in general, I think that's the internet in general. You know, I think if you go to AOL or you go to Yahoo and go to their normal news section and there's an open comment thread, the bottom is like, people, at least on most comic book message boards, they act like assholes, but they can spell and they know how to put in commas and stuff. I mean, there are some really awful stuff on the internet. I think the way it becomes problematic, I think, for creators is that it's very easy to say to a creator, hey, why don't you just stay off the internet, you know? But if you look at certain creators, the reason they've made their job the way it is because they have that internet. I mean, look at Warren Ellis. You know, like, Warren Ellis, I like a lot of his books, and I've met him, and he's always been very nice to me in person, but you got to say, Warren Ellis sometimes will drop a project from Marvel. You know, whatever happened to New Universal, whatever happened to a couple different things he started.
He's publicly said that he's whoring himself out for a paycheck.
He's publicly said that. But why does he have the financial stability to be able to do that? Because for years, Warren Ellis was king dick of the internet, and he had message boards that he was on all the time, and when people would show up, he would be a dick to him, and it built a real group of people that just love whatever he does. So he releases books through Avatar. He'll put out Freak Angels online or whatever, and he can make a living off that in ways a lot of other people can't do because he built that internet persona for years.
Right.
And you know, it's hard because when you're starting.
I'm not saying necessarily stay off the internet. And believe me, you know, we've spent the last 5 years enjoying the fact that creators are willing to talk to you and are online and are open and wanting to promote their work, as well as just, you know, let us know more about them. It's awesome. It's fantastic as a comic book fan and a podcaster, especially that they're willing to do that. But I just think at some point you have to understand that there's a certain amount of dickery that you're going to have to put up with.
It's never going to
go away. No matter how nice of a guy, I'm sure Dan Slott's a fucking great guy. Anyone with a brain knows that this is the dumbest comment that someone could say about Dan Slott, that he's not a real fan. If you know anything about Dan Slott, I don't know that there's a bigger fan, you know what I mean, of Spider-Man. But
my favorite Dan Slott moment, I'm at New York Comic Con like 3 years ago, and it was when they were still getting that show up and running and kind of getting through the kinks of it. And we're trying to get through like the professional line, which I have no idea how we got funneled in there.
We snuck in.
And Dan Slott is standing right in front of me. And Dan is almost a full foot shorter than me. He is a tiny little guy. And he's like, he was looking at one of the ushers there, and he's like, I write the thing. I have a panel I have to be at in 5 minutes. Please let me in.
but like I said, I certainly have no problem with Dan Slott telling this guy to go fuck himself. But I just don't think it's never going to be beneficial to do that.
You got to think sometimes. I think anybody, if you got them in a completely calm moment where they're not on the internet and said, hey, is it your best idea to engage with these idiots who are out there? Not that everybody is an idiot who's out there on the internet. Not that everybody on the comic book resources message boards are idiots where this altercation took place. They're very, very nice people in our community at comic book resources.
Very, very nice.
I deal with them all the time.
Educated.
Dicks.
No. College educated.
But you know, the thing is that I've taken a very small, every once in a while somebody will come out, I'll do an interview with somebody, and then there'll be some comment that'll be like, well, this asshole from CBR obviously is a paid shill from Marvel, fuck him, blah, blah, blah. And they say things not just about your work, but about you personally. And no matter how many times you tell yourself like, oh, I just got to let this slough off because that's the internet, sometimes it bothers you.
I can't imagine for someone who's a writer, an artist, that kind of thing, that one, I mean, you know, their job inherently is wanting people to like what you do. I mean, that's, you know, it's
putting a part of yourself out
there. Putting yourself into something and then putting it out there for people to judge it. That alone is really fucking hard and brutal to put yourself through. But that's what I mean. It's like, why go looking for more of that? You know, it's like fucking just, you know, it's so brutal to begin
with.
Holy
probably
shit.
The single most frustrating thing, though, is that I'm sure when Dan Slott is at a convention, this guy will be the first one to come up and get his Spider-Man signed.
Right.
And that's the most frustrating thing. Hate him, okay, but like legitimately be honest about it rather than saying, "Oh, I really like you, sir. Please sign my book to my friend and then my cousin." And then, like, they'll have 10 other books.
Really right. Cool.
Yeah.
And it's crazy if you go to these conventions how different the tone of conversation is.
Love them.
People
yeah.
walking up, even people who have an issue, "I didn't like this story." You rarely see at a convention panel somebody waiting in line and getting up there and they've got a dais full of, you know, it's Jeff Loeb and Joe Quesada and Brian Michael Bendis, whatever, and they'll be like, "Hey, fuck you, blah, blah, blah." You know, even when they take a complaint up, usually they.
It's the most nice complaint
it
you'll ever
hear.
It's
the most nice complaint,
yeah.
very well worded.
Well, sure.
Or when it is, every once in a while,
you know.
Somebody comes out and says something like the internet, and then you just see the room turn against them.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
best thing I saw when I was at New York this year, I was sitting there, and this guy came up. I was telling the story to somebody. God, I hope I didn't tell you guys this last time on the podcast. But like, this guy came up and was like, "I just want to let you know."
Norton's just over there fuming. He just said he wants to.
He's just drinking and making out.
He's just
that's
like
all he's doing.
Fucking Salazar.
There was this one time on the DC boards when I was on Green Arrow.
Oh. No, and I actually carried
on. I was going to say, I've been in fights on the CBR message boards, and K-Dog, you can fuck yourself.
All right, forget it. My point is invalid.
Yeah. I'm going to get a call from Jonah Weiland about this podcast.
Hi, Jonah.
No, but I was going to say, the best moment from New York, this guy got up, and he was like, "I want us to say, I really loved Ultimate Spider-Man for a long time, but ever since Ultimatum, that book has sucked. All the Ultimate books have sucked. Bendis, what you've been doing has sucked. Loeb, what you've been doing has sucked." And then, like, Dan Buckley, who's normally the quietest guy, like, grabbed the microphone and was like, "Hey, stop buying the fucking books. Next question."
Yeah. Nice.
Like, boom. And everybody was like, "Well, I stopped buying them." And Dan's like, "Great. Somebody who cares about what's going on and has something they want to talk about is going to ask a question that's better than you griping. So just yeah. move on, you know?"
Good for
and,
Dan
yeah.
Buckley.
It was good.
Good for him. Good for
well,
him.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just thought it was sort of interesting.
Yeah,
it is one of those things where, like, you see more and more comic. I mean, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when it wasn't as prevalent, you didn't see creators online as much. Yeah.
Well, you know who
I grew up in a time where you never. I didn't know what any of these guys sounded like.
It was
the
letters page. That's
exactly
what it was,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
the other part of that story though
is that who picked up the sword for Dan on that?
I don't know. I didn't.
Steve Wacker.
Oh, really?
Oh,
Steve's
yeah.
hilarious, too.
Yeah.
I would not want to get in a fight with him on a
message board. This moved from CBR to another, believe it or not, another podcast forum, which will remain nameless.
Really?
Yeah, and Steve
Oh,
Wack.
Name it, please. What's everybody knows other than me?
Spider Crawl Space or something. It's
wasn't the one you were thinking of.
No, not the one I was hoping for.
And Steve Wacker comes in and basically, you know, kind of, you know, weighed some lumber down. And everything I've heard from about Steve Wacker is that he is an amazing editor, and every creator that has ever worked with him will go to bat for him.
I was an intern for Steve, and he's great.
I've heard he's awesome.
Yeah.
I've heard he's now.
Hey, well, you know, I mean. That's the thing, though. It's like most, you know, any one of these guys, anyone that knows them is going to defend them.
Yeah.
Because
was he the editor on the majority of 52?
Yeah, he left 52, I mean, somewhere around the late 20s, I think.
And then went to Marvel and,
yeah.
and then was part of the Spider-Man.
He did the Spider-Man thrice
yeah.
monthly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
One thing I was going to add, though. Again, a self-plug. The actual post on the Robot 6 blog by Sean T. Collins about the dance slot, go fuck yourself incident, Sean comments a bit about what constitutes proper etiquette for both creators and fans, and it's a really interesting piece. If you go, once you hear this, just go to Robot 6 and search dance slot, go fuck yourself, and you'll find the post.
I mean, the problem is, though, is like if you have to teach someone what proper etiquette is, then you know, you've already lost.
Yeah.
That's, you know, there's no point. Yeah. What else? Anything?
I'm really since he's standing in the room here, I'm really excited about Young Justice because I saw the premiere of the cartoon, and
that was awesome.
I was a fucking 12 year old kid.
Yeah, that was great.
I was like, holy shit, Aqualad is fucking awesome.
Mike, I really was hoping for the emo sad Aqualad from the
Carl Kershaw emo Aqualad.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for that.
I think it needs more Batman. That
Tom Kelly, go fuck yourself. I think is what Mike Norton's thinking. Right now.
Yeah, you know, animation in comic properties, I think is probably as good as it's been since the heyday of the Bruce Timm Batman animated series. We've got some great animated stuff going on from both Marvel with, you know, the Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and we've got Young Justice coming out, and Batman Brave and the Bold continues to be just
DC awesome. Ones have been really, really very good.
Is Jack getting into Brave and the Bold?
My son's into all and I don't really try and push superhero stuff on him, or he's naturally sort of gravitated toward it. My daughter
naturally
is,
no problem.
Well, no,
at
I mean
all.
It's there, so I don't. I honestly have
son,
have,
stay out of my room filled with comic books.
No,
they're bad. Do not watch Brave and the Bold.
Go into the basement where there are nails sticking.
No,
out
but
of the
I
wall.
Never. I never tried to really push the stuff on my kids. I mean, it was to some degree.
Batman obviously, action just, figure or Barbie?
It's no, just okay. going to be there. I did buy my daughter a Supergirl doll at one point, but no. I did make a conscious effort of not trying to just force that stuff on them. It's like they'll find it. They'll naturally But Jack's absolutely into any of that stuff. You know, we watch any of the animated stuff that comes out. He's Brave and the Bold. He watches all the old Batman stuff, the Bruce Timm stuff. He watches the any
watch
of the Batman
shows. Fleischer era.
No, Superman. We haven't gone that far back.
They're showing the Adam West stuff on TV.
I
got
no, I don't know. He'd probably dig it.
I loved it when I was six. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man. Right now, if I was 12 years old, right now with all the movies and all the cartoons and all the stuff that's
every
out
product
there,
you need a pencil bag for school.
Yeah,
you need whatever toothbrush. It's got superheroes on it. Yeah.
And the thing is, they sell superhero merchandise everywhere. I was talking to Mike earlier today. I was on Michigan Avenue, walking around. We went to the Disney store, and they have Marvel stuff in there now.
Well,
they have
Captain
America shirts.
They paid a lot of fucking money to do that.
$4 billion of the product.
Did you guys see that? That DC jewelry stuff that came out on the
The Gotham ring.
The Gotham City ring. It's like
Wonder Woman bracelets.
Yeah, but they're like high end jewelry. They were not cheap. I mean, the Gotham ring was like $650 or something.
For a while, there was my girlfriend got me one shirt from I think it was Bloomingdale's had a specific, and there were like T-shirts and some of the stuff were ties, but it was like high class, designer T-shirts. It was like $45 for a T-shirt, for like a Batman T-shirt with a Carmine Infantino cover on it.
Oh yeah,
really strange.
There's H&M sells like men's briefs that have like Iron Man and Superman stuff on them, and they're like the underoos from
made out of imported silk though.
I'm wearing Thing underwear right now.
I didn't need to know that.
But
going back to my son,
it's clobbering time. That's all we know.
But Jax, he's absolutely into all that stuff. His room is covered in, superhero stuff. He's got all his figures, and anytime a new animated film comes out, we watch it right away, and he will watch them over and over again. And it kind of drives me a little nuts with some of the animated stuff because it's like, it's great for me to sit down and watch with my son, but then it's like they got to throw in the occasional, asshole or something. You know what I mean? Or
just make it PG-13.
It's like,
there was no reason
what?
To
There's
do
no
that.
Point to it whatsoever.
I wasn't titillated because you said shit.
And my kids have been, my son's like, oh, that's a bad word. It's not like something that's, he's five. It means nothing to him, but now he's getting into
Batman Under the Red Hood, which I thought was definitely more mature than
I don't know if
than,
I showed him that one or not.
Yeah,
that's
not for a 6-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, there's lines.
I think they're still finding who the audience is for that stuff because I think you watch those first few Marvel DVDs that came out and they were just the origin of Doctor Strange, origin of Iron Man or whatever, and those were a bit more innocuous, but they didn't sell as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I
want
to
see Robin get beat with
a
crowbar.
There's a reason. There's a reason. Stuff like Shrek and it's borderline
naughty.
Ice Age and Cars.
Naughty. It's dual layered. I mean, there's stuff that is written very well.
Smart.
Adults will get certain jokes that kids are not going to get, and it doesn't matter to the story. The kids are is intrigued by the story,
and yet
the adults are entertained as well. And that stuff's awesome. One of the greatest things that Disney does is they release Blu-ray discs with a DVD, so that me and my kids can both have a copy of the same movie.
And
I don't have to worry about mine getting fucked up, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because
you know what? I absolutely love all those movies. My kids absolutely love all those movies. So there's a reason those things work because they're entertaining, the good stories. They don't have to be intentionally dirty or anything like that.
Then you look at like some of the content from the old Bugs Bunny and the old Tom and Jerry that, we grew up on. Mm-hmm. There's you know, it's edited today now. You can't watch it in its original form.
I want the original Warner Brothers.
They've got like collector's DVDs. Archive, like if you're the archive stuff, and I buy those for my niece.
Yeah. I want to see Elmer Fudd get blown in the face by a fucking shotgun.
Oh, I mean, Tom and Jerry is always sight gags with knives, electricity, explosions.
But there's more racy stuff. I don't know if you guys have seen this show. I can't think of the name of it. It's like Titan Ultimo Maxima. It's the same guy who did Samurai Jack and some of the other ones. It's his new one on Cartoon Network. I don't know what the name of it is. It's got some weird kind of anime sounding name. But there's this blog, Cartoon Brew, which is the best blog of the animation industry if you follow that at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they showed a clip from this show by this guy, and it was like, the show takes place in a high school, and the scene that they did was an animated scene of like a cheerleader type girl, and it was like as close to a striptease I think you could see animated. You're looking at me with your eyebrow cocked right now. I swear this thing is pretty racy for a show that gets shown on Cartoon Network at like 6 p.m. on a Friday whatever.
I'll tell you, so. My kids always, The Simpsons comes on, they want to watch it. I don't really want my kids to watch The Simpsons. Yeah. Not because, but they think it's a cartoon. It's like, it's a cartoon, but it's not for kids. Yeah. I mean, Family Guy. That not is for kids, not for kids. No. It looks like a cartoon.
King of the Hill. Not for kids.
My
at all.
Kids think that, they're like, why can't we watch that? And it's like, well, you're just,
you're not going to get the jokes.
Yeah, you're not going to get it. And Mr. if you do Figgler, get it, are I don't you watch us? It.
I'm leaving. I'm off to Michigan.
Go, have fun in Michigan.
Go grab me a comic book artist. And have a great weekend.
Grab you a comic book artist. What is it? Oh, you mean
bring Norton.
I didn't know if he was going to
He's going to go fondle some comic book artists.
Go to Michigan and bring me an artist.
Yeah, that was kind of odd.
Mike.
It's Ryan Stegman's in Michigan.
Stegman, Jeremy Bastian, David Peterson.
Hello, Mike Norton.
I wish you had told me you were going to talk about assholes on the internet. I would have said I'd be. All right.
throw some headphones on there.
We didn't know. It just came up.
Well,
you've had a few.
To spread some holiday cheer.
Where's mine, motherfucker?
Is that from me?
Where's my holiday cheer?
I give you holiday cheer every fucking day.
Jesus.
And he says that.
You don't buy me bottles of.
It ain't Christmas yet. This might be the last time I see.
That's cool.
What is it, wild turkey?
I can make my.
I can't drink wild turkey.
Red hooks with this.
There you go.
That's cool.
So
thank you.
Happy holidays, sir.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. I wish I'd have brought something.
No. You bring us joy every month.
You're like a ray of sunshine.
You are. You're like a freaking Christmas elf. 6 foot. God, six that would be Christmas hilarious. Elf.
Big gloomy Christmas elf.
We were talking about Young Justice. How's it going?
Good.
What's up with that? Update us.
What's up with that? What's up with that? Ooh, every time I hear somebody say that.
My wife plays that once a day
what
on
is
YouTube.
That? What are you doing?
It's from Saturday Night Live. It's probably the only funny skit that...
I haven't watched that show in 10 years. Like,
yeah. No, funny. But that, I can't think of the guys. The guy from...
Kenan and Kel.
What's up with that?
I don't know. He does like a...
What's up with that?
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So what's up with that?
Young Justice.
It's going. It's going good. I was working on it today.
We heard you don't like Dwight.
What kind of question do you have?
You don't like Dwight Batman?
I hate Batman.
Thrilling.
Surprisingly enough, you enjoy drawing people running fast.
Oh yeah, flashes are cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think. I thought that would be hard to do.
Is this like the first time you've drawn a speedster in a book?
I want to say no. I've got to. I had to have at some point. But
like Trinity or any of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, Jay was a big part of Trinity, at least in the backups. But it was mostly just headshots and stuff. Right. There wasn't a lot of running around.
That's what you wanted out of your speedsters. Yeah. A lot of headshots.
Slow conversations. Yeah.
And that's what I thought I'd dislike about it is actually drawing people running. That seems like that would be an awkward and hard thing to do, but it's actually pretty fun.
Cool.
I forgot what I was going to
say. You enjoy Robin, though. I know you do like
The characters are fun. The story is really cool. It's a lot.
It's Art and Franco, too.
Art and Franco, but they're working very tightly with Greg Weisman and Brenna Vietti.
Who's that?
Those are the guys that are writing the show.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, because I was going to ask because, Art and Franco are you know, Art's been on the show before, and, uh-huh. And kind of famously, their creative process is, well, I call up Franco on Friday night about 7, and we talk while I draw for like
four hours,
and they bounce they're ideas done. Off each other.
They've written like 6 issues by the end of it.
Not the standard corporate licensed property.
This is a definitely. I got a feeling. I haven't talked to them in depth. I mean, I talk to Franco more than I do Art, which is weird because Art lives in town. But
yeah, that's practically neighbors.
I talked to Franco more. I get the feeling that this is a different experience for them.
Yeah,
obviously than it has been in the past. I think this is definitely the most supervised project they've worked on. You know, usually it's like Art and Franco go do your thing, and then they come back and say, "Hey, check it out!" And everybody,
"Oh yeah, man!
Oh yeah!" Man. But this is much more, I think, supervised by the Hollywood thing.
Have you seen any more of the series, or just the?
I
just
know
the first
a lot
one?
About
what's going to happen.
What's going to happen? Yeah. I've seen tons of character designs. I haven't seen. I mean. I've seen as much animation as everybody else.
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah, it looks good.
I had so much fun watching it.
Yeah,
it
was, I mean, and the story is really cool. I mean, it's much more. You know, I don't want to.
You put Cadmus in something, I'm there, because that's enough of the espionage
Jesus,
thing,
right?
I'm like, ooh, Cadmus. Oh,
it's not. Yeah, it's not a kiddie story.
It's
like the old comic book, actually. I mean, it's pretty much the same kind of fare as
with and I'm pumping you for information with Cadmus and Amanda Waller. Are we going to see some?
Amanda Waller, I think.
Yeah. Are we?
Oh my God! Are you just trying to get Checkmate stuff in?
No. Are we going to see any Suicide Squad?
You can't say.
No, he's thinking.
Maybe?
No.
Okay. Not yet.
I'm trying to think. No. Why would you have
Suicide Squad in a kid's cartoon? Yeah.
Because it's Suicide Squad and it's cool and it's got Amanda Waller and Cadmus and it's. Come on, I want to see some Deadshot. Oh, little tiger.
All right. So back to assholes on the internet.
go watch your Smallville.
Damn.
Don't they have them on there?
Yeah, Cadmus and Amanda Waller.
Now it's all Dark Side.
It's Dark Side. Yeah, I don't know. I stopped watching it.
I checked out a long time ago.
I watched a couple episodes here and there, the Geoff Johns stuff and that. But yeah.
They need hotter women on that show.
I'm trying to think.
Lois is hot.
Yeah, was Cheshire on Suicide Squad?
Is who?
Was Cheshire on
she
Suicide
was.
Squad?
She was, yeah.
Any bad guy that's been repurposed as a good guy is.
Deadshot
been,
was always on that.
Deadshot's always Suicide Squad. But he's, you know, he's,
I'd rather see the Metal Men in the cartoon.
Well, Captain Boomerang is always.
I'd rather see Metal Men anywhere.
Metal Men are awesome.
Yeah.
They need to be a cartoon, an animated film.
Oh, that
or
would
something.
Be a great idea for a cartoon.
Yeah. I think Metal Men are a perfect. Fit for an animated series.
Yeah. Especially for like
I mean,
a kids
I see the
one,
toys because, already. Yeah. And,
I'm ready for
I mean,
that. You know,
and they can turn into anything, so it's like an endless line
I just
of
think,
toys
yeah,
and
I just
merch,
think that's a perfect and
that's a real good point.
Suicide Squad, it's my biggest
I need to talk to somebody over there. Who can I talk to?
At the top of my list of biggest disappointments of 2010.
Oh, let's not do lists. No, we're not doing fucking lists of 2010.
They had solicited a Suicide Squad showcase and then canceled it.
Boo-hoo.
So angry.
Dude,
angry,
you were
Sal.
The only one that worked.
Angry.
One pre-order, and it just didn't, I thought maybe not.
Come on, Suicide Squad?
You know what? Hey, I've The Losers, Suicide Squad, all those books are fantastic in concept. Mm-hmm. Challengers of the Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Great concepts. But shitty fucking comic books.
Well, they work in that own sort of like adventure time frame, like when Darwin Cook's using them, or when you first see that
small
challenge.
Bits, and you throw the challengers in somebody else's book for a little while. Awesome.
Yeah.
You throw,
or just in like a literal.
I can see that.
I mean, they're secondary titles for a reason because they just don't.
Just
work.
Give me a showcase.
No.
Please.
You can't have it.
Come on. You solicited it.
You'll get it.
Now, Mike, in Young Justice, are there any specific like locales or like superhero bases and stuff that you get to draw that you haven't done before? Like, do you ever throw in things like? You know,
I've never drawn Mount Justice before.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know about Mount. I never read
Mount
Young
Justice.
That's their headquarters.
Oh, that was the old mountain base, JLA. Right? Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that is that was that.
I never read a lot of the old Young Justice.
I like the old Young Justice series.
I was very surprised when I would mention the stuff and somebody would say, "Oh yeah, just like in the old." And I was like, "Oh, so I guess they're keeping pretty close to the actual old series."
Yeah, it seems like it. I haven't because it's been so long since I read that. I remember reading. I remember liking it a lot. I probably still have the original issues of that.
Yeah, but there's a lot of this. I mean, Red Tornadoes, like their house mother.
Yeah,
it's like Ma Hunkle.
Yeah. Well, no, actual robot Tornado.
But like,
yeah, but he's the house mother.
Yeah,
like Ma Hunkle.
Well, I thought you were talking about the other Red Tornado. Because that's who she was.
No, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah.
What kind of nerds are you?
Not very good ones.
Back off.
Now, but when they do things interacting with, you know, the JLA, do things like do a watchtower? Do you do the satellite or things like that? Or do they just not?
I'm sure they'll show up. They're not. Yeah. They haven't been. I'm only drawn one issue.
I mean, I think with obviously you got Batman interacting with them.
Yeah,
in year three,
he does whatever he wants.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I do know they have plans for past this, and they plans definitely get bigger. Like they don't. I don't think I'm not giving anything away because they've said it in their own, online. Clips and stuff. I mean, characters will die and people will come in and replace and stuff like that. So, I mean, they're working this like it's,
what do you think of the
big boy
stuff? The Aqualad sort of or Aqualad power up that they've kind of done?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, Aqualad, they've given him these like weapons.
Oh, I like those.
Yeah,
but I don't know anything about Aqualad.
I don't really either.
Wasn't he just like a younger version of Aquaman?
That's
in
what I thought.
And stuff?
Yeah, well, this is a different
Aqualad. Well, this is a new Aqualad.
Yeah, this is Calderam or whatever.
Yeah, it's. I mean, this is all coming out of Brightest Day.
He's a subject of.
I think in the last animated series, when they would have Aqualad show up, like he could command water and things like that.
I was just a little shocked when he was like taking on Superboy one-on-one. I was
he's pretty strong. I think they're trying to, because Aquaman's pretty strong too. I think they're trying to play up.
Well, I need to catch up on my Brightest Day and catch up with the whole Aqua.
Not really.
I'm riding it out.
Okay,
that's a long ride. I think
it's a long, hard ride with
this kid is going to end up being like Black Manta's son or something like that, or some sort of relation.
Why? Because he's black?
Yeah.
Jeez,
it's a lot.
Not every black guy is related to every other black guy in comics.
Sal, we're all brothers.
Yes. Yeah. Eventually, I guess.
But yeah, I've got to catch up on the whole Brightest Day thing and get caught up with.
All right, what else is going on? And what else can we talk about? What else?
What else is going on
in comics? In around comics?
In around comics?
I'm just trying to segue to something. All right. Else?
Peanut Gallery. Throw us a bone.
Are we?
Oh, the Thor trailer.
You had us watch the trailer.
All right, thank you.
I prefer it with Mike's soundtrack, though.
I watched it before you guys, and that didn't have sound. So,
but it was like just grooving over there in the corner.
Mike was just standing in the back going, James.
James.
It was a lot of head bobbing. Yes. It was,
hammer. Lightning.
So far, I have to say I have been very impressed with everything I've seen from Thor.
It looks awesome.
From the casting to the costumes to everything. And that trailer was... I was getting chills.
Yeah.
Watching epic.
Well, talking about the brothers, though, they do have a very dark skinned Norse god.
Oh, Heimdall.
Yeah. I was like, wait, who's that guy? I didn't know who that was. Yeah. And then someone said it was Heimdall. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's Heimdall.
Kirby's black. Why does he have those weird eyes?
Oh, he's probably possessed.
Because he sees all time and all that, Heimdall. What kind of nerd are you? Obviously,
you walked into that one, Mike.
God, Mike. Call Walter Simonson.
Internet fight.
We've had those before.
Yeah, I know. You've sealed your fate.
Oh, I'm so glad you guys like each other again.
But
we have the hammer,
and well, the poster came out. Yeah. The first poster came out,
which looked
pretty cool.
So good. Yeah.
When they show the hammer, and this is the thing. Like, this is one of the problems I had with the Green Lantern trailer, and with a lot of science fiction movies, you find, like, whenever there's a piece of science fiction technology, it always has to look science fiction-y, you know? Right. And my thought is always, like, if this is an advanced alien race, and, you know, highly evolved, advanced alien race that has been able to create technology that effectually is magic to us, don't you think that at some point, like, efficiency of design or, like...
Yeah, form follows function.
Yeah, they would come along, you know, a little bit, their designs of stuff, instead of everything is sort of, like, clunky, you know, like Transformers. Oh, there are these amazing, you know, highly advanced robots, but they have, like, jagged parts sticking out of everywhere. Where's the design? Where's the designer sitting there going, yeah, we can do this.
I was in Target today.
It needs to look more like the
getting
Apple
some
store.
Stuff, and I was looking at the action figures, and they have a Soundwave action figure, and I was really upset because I looked on the back, and he transforms into a truck.
Huh?
Yeah, and I was like, no, he was a boombox in the 80s, man. Look, that's so upsetting to me.
Here's the thing.
Mike's going to drop some knowledge. Mike's here it comes. Here it comes. Clear the alley.
There is the whole form versus function thing. And then there's, hey, this is fucking cool.
Well, but
that's
this
what
cool.
90% of comics
I
is
get
about.
That. No, I certainly
and movies.
Get.
I mean, and sure, there's a lot of retrofitting, and some of that retrofitting is kind of clunky. It's like, hey, I got this badass fucking robot. let's make a movie about it. See what you can do with that. It's like, and the writers is like, he's like you. He's like, I can't. There's nothing fucking cool I can do with it. There's a fucking robot.
Well, no, but I think you could. I mean, hey, there's enough artists that work on a film that could come up with conceptual designs of something other than.
Well,
you know,
do.
Look at the Green Lantern. Look at the Green Lantern movie. You have that fucking ugly ass lantern that he has. And I understand. Hey, we don't want it to look like a train lantern because that doesn't make much sense.
No.
But why does it have to look like a bunch of shit welded together in like nooks and crannies? And you know, it's a power source. It's a fucking battery. Why would it look like that? Why would it? Because they think it looks cool. I'm just saying.
I think they outsourced their work and got shot. You could come up with cooler looking designs.
Yeah, you're probably right. But there's, I mean, that's where you got to meet in the middle somewhere between high concept and the established property that this is based on.
I just think like something like that, like 10 years ago, that looks cool. Now it's like we're getting to a point where I think we need a new. Level
well,
of what looks cool with that
when
kind of
you look
stuff.
At things it, like
will Tron lead the way for us?
Maybe Tron looks
Tron
fucking cool.
Looks pretty.
Yeah,
cool.
There you go. There's the,
well,
the, you
what's going to be funny is in 20 years, whenever you know people
Tron's
look back
terrible.
And say, "God, Tron looks so fucking dorky."
That's an interesting. that's an interesting point because I was rewatching the original Tron. And, you know, I haven't watched it in a long time.
Oh, it's painful. Yeah.
It is. It's just like, oh, God, I love this movie
Bruce
so much.
Bruce Boxleitner.
I love this movie.
He's still awesome.
But will a movie that's made today like
still
a Tron?
Awesome.
Still, yes. Yes. Yes, he is.
I missed the train.
Yes, he is.
What has he done that qualifies him for
Babylon 5, and therefore he will be awesome forever.
Okay.
I thought he was a Scarecrow and Mrs. King guy.
Yeah, he did do that.
Yes.
Oh, he is.
He is.
But okay. Babylon 5 forever.
Sheridan
will be awesome forever.
I keep forgetting that show.
But I just wonder, like, I mean, you can certainly point to stuff in Tron, the original Tron movie, like, oh, the special effects are terrible, the ideas of what computers couldn't do.
At
some level, the acting is just... But you look at a movie made today, and it's like the Matrix.
Right.
That's... How old is the Matrix now?
10 years.
10 years old?
Yeah.
Do we look back at, like, the Matrix and go...
Yeah, we do.
Oh, my God. You kind of do, right? But it's like it's weird to think that something
like
that
was... It's the same
was,
with, like, War Games or the movie Hackers. Like, you start looking at the technology that they're using and the terms that they're throwing out, and you're like, that, you know, most kids nowadays, like, are far more computer literate and tech
want
literate.
Want to play a game?
Yeah. Like I mean, the best is, like, you watch War Games, and, like, the computer calls him on his modem, and you're just sitting there, like, you're watching it now, and you're like, dude... First of all, that sounds insane. And second of all, it's like, why doesn't he just unplug his modem, which is just this giant, like, huge telephone thing? It's, you know,
Well, no, that's understandable. But a movie like Tron's going to come out.
You talked about the original Tron.
Master Control. He's like a dude sitting in his office talking to Master Control. It's like, holy shit, they had AI back then. This computer's talking to, you know, it's like
you were talking.
Oh yeah, but like even the programs are like there's an actuary program and there's another program and they're all fighting it out in the game sphere. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know Daft Punk shows up in the game and they're like entertainment programs and stuff. I mean, you got to wonder like, are there going to be all these app like things running around? Like, I'm an app. Die, Flynn, die. Probably, you know, or is that going to come out later, like when we're, you know, when, you know, kids are going to look back in like 30 years and go and like, yeah, that's not anything like the interweb that I have in my head beamed into my skull right now.
Sal was talking about, it's like whenever they made the first Tron, I mean, there were programmers and then there were the rest of us. And there were like,
there were 3% of the population that understood how a computer worked and everybody else, they had no fucking clue. And
it's like,
that shit's cool. You know, that must be how it works. Computers can talk. You know, my mother's not alive, but if my mother was alive and she watched Tron, she'd, computers can talk to you.
That's what my son thinks
the first Tron is cutting edge.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It's like,
all I know is that the white cycles are still fucking cool.
Well, I honestly don't remember anything about that movie other than dudes had glowing costumes and they had
the white cycle discs,
and they had.
I remember all
that. I mean, that's all you need to know. That was cool. That's exactly my robot thing.
Yeah,
we got these really cool glow in the dark dudes.
See, I remember the arcade.
And that's all this new movie's going to be, except that we got computers now that can do.
And somehow the guy from
I guess it's just
Time Pirates got in there.
Making Time Pirates. I love Time Pirates. You remember Time Pirates? The midgets flying?
Bandits.
Why can't you watch Time Bandits?
The entire peanut gallery just said, what kind of nerd are you?
He finds it insulting, you know.
No, I gave away my copy of that movie.
Really? He finds Terry Gilliam pretentious.
I find the idea of 5 minutes coming out of my closet in the middle of the night frighteningly disturbing.
Well, it was. That is such a fucking dark movie. That is the darkest.
Yeah, his parents get killed at the end.
Terry Gilliam.
He's terrible.
I hate that idea.
No, don't touch that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Sean Connery.
I love that. That's
Dick. You know, just horrible guy.
No, Sean Connery was awesome. He was great in that. I love that movie. I love that. And Terry Gilliam, for as much shit as he gets, I think is a visionary fucking
and
genius.
And who is
what does he get shit for?
Who is the actor who's the supreme evil in that one? That's
David Warner.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
The same guy in Tron.
Yep. Yeah, sorry. Yes. Sorry, yeah.
Master Control.
The MCP was just some
Alan Rickman thing going on back then. He was like, hey, we need a British guy. Let's call up that guy.
Nice. There always is those guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every generation has their Alan
Julian
Rickman.
Sands was that for like 4 minutes.
Who's that guy now? Like, who would be that guy?
Oh, it's that strong guy. It's the dude in Green Lantern coming.
Oh,
up.
Yeah. That guy. Yeah.
Or Tom Strong or whatever.
Or like Hugo Weaving.
See, I was thinking it was going to be maybe it's the guy from Inglourious Bastards now. He's going to be the 2000 old.
Ah, Green Hornet will fix that.
Are you not looking forward to that, are you?
No, I'll watch it.
Okay.
I don't think that's probably the best career decision he made. Well, he was a fill-in. He was a fill-in, wasn't he? He was filling in for Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took over.
It's not like it's like, oh, well, this is
good. Well, it's gotten good reviews, though. That movie actually
could be good. I'm just saying, for him.
I think it looks fucking fun.
He was amazing in Inglourious Bastards. Without him, Inglourious Bastards is not half the film. You know,
that's a bingo.
I'm just saying, they're probably not going to let up the straightaway for him to go crazy on this
stuff. Yeah, you're right.
It's like, okay.
True, true.
You know, just let the Chinese guy and the fat guy do this stuff. You stand over here and... I can act! No, we want these guys. These are good guys.
Probably right.
That's why they want Nick Cage in it. Because Nick Cage can go over there and go, I'm crazy.
Actually, God, I hate Nick Cage.
No, have you seen the Nick Cage, the Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call?
No, I have not seen that.
There's a whole sequence where he's just rolling on drugs and he's looking at these lizards.
It's called The Movie.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the problem with Nick Cage for me is that most of what he does is so terrible, but then he'll pull out something that I absolutely think is amazing, like
Con Air
adaptation.
Oh.
Like him and Adam, he's awesome in that. And it's like, how can you be that guy and then be Ghost Rider? How is that possible that that's the same
Leaving
fucking
Las
guy?
Vegas.
Yeah, leaving Las Vegas. I mean, how are you the same guy?
That's depressing as fuck. But that's
like Raising Arizona. And
Raising
stuff
Arizona
like that,
is fantastic.
Yeah. But I mean,
but
that,
then
that's,
he just
that's
does terrible, terrible, terrible. You know,
he needs the money. That's what it is right now. He really needs the money.
Why does he need the money?
Oh, he's got money with he's bankrupt and the IRS is after
him.
Yeah.
He sold his entire
He buys a lot of weird stuff. Yeah.
How did he sell it, or how did he buy a lot of very odd
expensive things.
He's a fucked up dude.
Like he has like a weird like he likes like curiosities and art and things like that. And
the Elephant Man.
Well, yeah,
Michael Jackson.
Well, he has a fossil. He bid a ton of money for this like fossil or something.
Fucking
like
monkey paws and shit.
Yeah, crap like that. He had to sell his house and that's why he's been doing tons of movies like Sorcerer's Apprentice. That's why he did that film. He wanted the check. You know,
Gene Hackman.
Otis.
Chat's up. You know Chat.
I've told this story to other people.
Yeah,
that you've told me.
Chad Sup, a friend of mine, is friends with family members of Gene Hackman's, and he ended up going to like a wedding or something like that.
I know the story better than you do.
So he got the chance to talk to Gene Hackman. And this was at a time whenever Hackman was doing like four movies a year, mm-hmm. and they were not good movies.
Right.
And Chad, being Chad, was ballsy enough to say, "Why the fuck are you doing these movies?" I was like, "Well, I got divorced, got to pay the alimony."
But there's a difference between an actor that is in a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman generally
is good in
everything he's done, even if it's a terrible movie.
Oh, he's still good in everything he does, but he's in bad movies.
Where Nicolas Cage is in bad movies and he's fucking awful in them.
Well, he rides that roller coaster of good and bad and good and bad.
Yeah, like, I mean, he'll do something really good and he's really good in it, and then he does like four shit movies that he's terrible in, and it's just like, how is that? How do you do that? I don't understand. I don't know.
Nah.
Anyway, but Thor looks.
Thor looks fantastic.
Getting back to Thor, looked awesome. I'm looking forward to Kenneth Branagh. I think Kenneth Branagh is the perfect director.
Anthony Hopkins as Odin is bringing some thunder.
In that trailer, everything seems like in better context because I remember seeing the remake of Clash of the Titans, the newer version, and Liam Neeson just looks really weird in that.
He does
look weird.
That was a turd.
He's got this.
I didn't hate that movie.
I haven't seen it still. He's walking around
and like
the first one wasn't good.
That's why
I don't think it's bad. Look at this. I mean, it's lateral at the least.
But you guys loved the first one, right?
I loved it.
When I was
I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah. It's like, looking back at it now, it's terrible, but I mean, I fucking
but
love
yeah,
that.
When I was a kid, I used to jump out of trees for fun.
So did I.
I had kind of a weird level of entertainment.
I used to eat dirt. Sure enough. All right. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't.
But you just watch him walking around in that, silver outfit, and he's just super shiny and lights, and it seems like, with Thor as Odin, he seems everything's in context and the environment looks right.
That seemed to me, it's like, I'm going to have how much screen time and I'll be on set for how many days and you're going to pay
That's basically
all right,
what that
I'll
is.
Do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yeah. I got to be on set for 4 days and you're going to pay me this. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah, make me look sparkly. But no, Thor looks great.
It does.
I saw the latest Harry Potter movie.
Did you?
I still have to see that yet.
I watched all.
You got on a little Harry Potter kick after that.
You're a kick man.
No, I tried over and over again to both read the Harry Potter books and watch the movies. I really, really tried to get into Harry Potter, and I couldn't for whatever reason.
One or the other, or both of them.
Either one. I would get to the
third
book.
They are a different piece, yeah.
I read the first two books,
yeah.
Got through them, watched the first two movies, got through them. I got to the third one, and I couldn't finish either one.
That's interesting. I have similar. I don't think I had.
Well, they
much
do get progressively longer. Each book is bigger and bigger, yeah.
So I ended up, I had all the movies, I had all the books, I didn't read them, I didn't watch the movies, I just let them sit there. My niece and nephew, who are in their 20s, huge Harry Potter fans, yeah. Yeah. Just absolutely, that's, you know, they love that shit. So they're like, we're going to go see this latest movie. I'm like, well, they wanted me to go with them. I'm like, I haven't watched the other movies, I'm not going to go see this one. They're like, well, watch all the movies. I'm like, okay. So I sat down one like weekend and I watched the fourth. I just skipped the third one.
It seems like that would be fun though to do that.
It was fun. It was fun. I watched the fourth, fifth, and sixth movie, and then I went and saw the seventh one.
What did you think of the seventh?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I think with me and the Harry Potter stuff is the biggest problem I think I have with it is it's not anything particularly novel to me.
Right. I can see that.
You know, because I spent most of my childhood reading fantasy stuff.
Right.
And so watching that is just like, oh, I've kind of seen this before.
Right.
I mean, it's a little different.
No, I understand.
But not really anything dramatically impressive to me.
It's hard for me because I grew up reading the Narnia books. And
yeah, you know what I mean? Whether it's Narnia, Tolkien, I mean... Any Asimov stuff, and
Harry Potter, like, as awesome as it is, and I love it, I really enjoy it. It's wafer thin in comparison to Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. It just is. I agree.
And I had a problem with it, and I finally just was like, you know what? I gotta watch this stuff. So I did, and I do enjoy it. I think it's just a matter of like, there's a part of me that, you know, everybody loves it so much. So there's a part of me that's like, I can't love it as much as other people.
I get that too.
You still haven't read Asterius Polyp because of that.
I have not read.
Well, it's because those books came out. I forget that it's that long ago.
But I have to get past that. Like Superman 3
fight with myself.
Right.
Oh, no, cynicism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like, oh, I beat him, and now I can enjoy this. I was kind of like that with it, but I mean I thoroughly enjoy the movies.
I've enjoyed them. I read
the first book and I was just like, I don't need to read anymore. But it wasn't like I don't like it. It's just like, yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah.
If I was a kid,
that's how I felt.
And I got
about
attached
it.
To this, this would be the best thing. Yeah. This would be my Star Wars. Yeah. That I can see why everybody likes it.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's well done. I think I think she's a good writer. I think she's come up with a really great concept. I think it's interesting and entertaining.
Well, did it strike a chord?
Not with me. Obviously, with millions of other people. But the thing that drives me crazy is like everything about it. I should fucking love it.
Yes,
I should absolutely fucking love it. I love the idea of it.
Yeah,
I just don't actually love the stories. I like them.
But the thing about the books that I found. Enjoyable is especially when you get more on in like 3, 4, and you know.
Well,
later,
I was going to say the fourth one.
They're layered. All the books build on random elements that are in previous books.
This is my problem with the movie that just came out. I hated it.
Really?
Well, I don't.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not attached to these books, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've only seen these movies. They come out like once a year, every year and a half
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
I shouldn't have to do homework to watch a fucking movie.
And these books, I go in there and they're saying so and so from the third movie did this, and you didn't see it because it was in the background.
See, I just watched like four movies in a row, so I didn't have that.
And when you read the books,
when I go in there and I'm watching it, and I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, don't you treat me like I'm stupid? What the fuck? And then by the end of it, I'm just like, fuck you.
Fucking
asshole.
No, I could see that because actually it was funny. My niece and nephew walking out of the movie were talking about it, and I had to explain a couple of things to them because it had been so long since they read the books.
And I had just watched it.
It wasn't really exciting. It was also interesting parts of the first half.
Yeah, it's only that first half and wherever they ended.
But I will say the thing,
the
fourth book when
I started. The rest of it for you.
Well, I've started reading the fourth book because I watched
Everybody Dies.
I watched the fourth movie, and
some people do die.
What I liked about the fourth one is after Cedric Diggory dies,
right,
which is sort of like his metaphorical losing of his, you know,
innocence
childhood.
That's when it gets real.
That's really when it gets interesting. And I said this on Twitter. I'm like, why didn't anybody tell me this book gets interesting? These books get interesting after he dies. I would have just started reading at that point.
Yeah.
Because I still, it's just like the whole.
But that's where the tone of those books go from light to dark.
Like, yeah.
You know.
And I love the fifth one where it's about the political machinations of
about how they're trying to take
it's really interesting.
Over.
I mean, that yet, I find really, really interesting.
Yet you don't like Queen and Country.
Well, I didn't say I didn't like Queen and Country.
See, it's funny for you guys because, you know, you guys, I guess, you know, grew up reading a lot of, you know, a lot of fantasy like Tolkien and stuff like that. Where I was reading,
I was reading
Elric, but I was also reading things like Howard E. Carter's, like you know, Conan and John Carter of Mars. I was much more in the adventure sort of aspect where there's a guy and there's a sword and he's just adventure. Beating the crap out of stuff. So
I read a ton of science fiction, ton of fantasy stuff. I mean, the Dungeons and Dragons, the Dragonlance book novels.
Oh, God, the Dragonlance book.
See, I've probably read those.
40 fucking Dragonlance novels.
That original trilogy of Dragonlance is some of my favorite.
Want to hear something funny?
Favorite ever.
This was, you know, I don't know how old I was at the time. When those came out. When do you think those came out?
You were probably like 14.
Okay. I wrote a letter to George Lucas.
It's in the Lucas vault, probably. Property of George Lucas right
I
now.
Had, I suggesting that he makes those books into movies.
Oh, God.
And I got a letter back from like his secretary saying, well, he doesn't do anything that he doesn't write. But thank you for the suggestion.
Really?
I got a letter back.
I'm surprised you got a letter back.
I don't think. No, I got, cool. it was from his
from the desk
secretary
of George
and
Lucas.
Said, no, it wasn't even that. It was from his secretary. And she said, you know, I'm writing you back. Thank you very much.
You know
what?
That letter's still there. It's like one of those Indiana Jones
warehouses. Exactly.
And it's in a big crate. And on stamped on the side, it says, dreams to smash. Waiting on the technology to smash this dream.
He has a giant box of those fucking letters.
Oh, God. Yeah. God, I haven't thought about the Dragonlance novels. That first trilogy.
Oh, I love those. I love those.
So
absolutely
good.
Fantastic.
The brothers, the albino brothers, the one that was the sorcerer and
you might as well be speaking gibberish at this point.
They were so good.
Wrestling was a badass.
Oh, it was so good. And then those went on and he became like a fucking, you know.
I was just reading Green Men of Mars and Chessmen at Mars.
Oh, it was so good.
You know?
But that's why it's like I read, you know, that stuff and like I said, Tolkien you know, the Chronicles of Narnia, and all that stuff. It's
C.S. Lewis.
Icewind Dale trilogy.
C.S. Lewis is so good.
Except for a really preachy religious guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, it depends. You know, Screwtape Letters, you know, read the Screwtape Letters. It's interesting.
Yeah. I'll be doing
Have you read the Screwtape Letters?
Oh, no.
Read the Screwtape Letters.
Just funny because a lot
it is correspondence between two demons. It's very.
But the interesting thing about like the Chronicles of Narnia is actually a lot of those stories are actually lifted from the Bible.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Like a boy and his horse is something like no, it really is. He's admitted it. He said it in correspondence. Yeah. He's adapted it. Like the boy and his horse is Saint Justin. The story of Saint Justin. I am not.
You're lying. I have never read that at all. That he's admitted to that.
Oh,
you're lying.
Well, why don't you
lying.
Go?
Stop making up falsehoods.
Write a letter to George Lucas and ask him these questions.
Hey, we were talking about the Matrix. You know. We were talking about the Matrix earlier. That's all Masonic mythology.
Everything comes down to one story.
It's
the story of Chris Niesman.
At one point,
it's all about you.
Yeah.
Yes, everything is
Christ
about
Niesman.
Oh, now he's like nipping at the wild turkey. Look at him.
Whoa, breaking it out.
Turkey's good.
Have a sip.
I can't drink it. The last time I had, I got hurt.
You saw the turkey?
No, I literally had heart palpitations. I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. The turkey will do that.
Maybe it was all the Red Bull you were chasing.
Maybe.
You all see the
y'all
see the Conan O'Brien.
Oh, Warner Brothers Bruce Timm.
Oh, yeah, I saw that this morning. That was hilarious. All I could think of when I saw that is that somewhere Claymore is upset about Batlash.
Oh,
I know. I was like, Batlash is awesome. He's not just a dandy.
I had never seen, he's a dandy. I had never seen Bruce Timm before. That was the first time I've actually seen what Bruce Timm looked like, and I was really disappointed. I was just like, wow, Bruce Timm's not anything what I hoped he would look like.
He'd have this huge square jaw.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting.
But it was an awesome drawing they did on
the
spot.
Wow, Bruce Timm's a nerdy
like
little
a cleft
cartoon.
He has a large head for a
That is the only time I have gone completely Chris Farley on a creator.
Bruce Timm?
Oh, Bruce Timm?
When did you meet Bruce Timm?
I do that with everybody. I mean.
Everyone you meet are like your idols, though. It was in San Francisco at WonderCon at Isotope, the awesome comic store.
Is that when you were outside screaming at people that you're going for sandwiches and stuff like that?
So when you say you met Chris Farley, it means you were super drunk and...
I was super drunk and I was like, Mr. Timm, I think you're really awesome, and my nephews think that Batman the Animated Series is really cool.
And all he's going is security.
And I was like, stupid. It was. I went totally Farley on.
I would do that if I ever met.
I did that with Terry Moore this year.
Yeah,
New York.
I would do that.
I would do that with probably Darwin.
Well, the thing is, Darwin Cook was fucking standing right next to him.
You're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know.
See, I would probably go the. I would probably do something really stupid with Darwin, like
splash a drink in your face,
like try and tough guy Darwin Cook, because you know, like,
don't do that.
Like, I mean, be that stupid. Like,
he'll run you over in a car.
Yeah, I know. Well, but I like that about him.
Honestly, one of my.
That's why I like Darwin Cook.
My favorite possessions, and it was the same party, and I'd sobered up enough to go up and meet Darwin Cook. He was signing. And I've got an absolute New Frontier with signed by Darwin Cook with a Hal Jordan Green Lantern sketch.
Yeah, my girlfriend was in San Diego doing something with the Hero Initiative, and she got to hang out with him at a cocktail party. And he had some really funny stories talking about New Frontier.
He's awesome. He's a great guy.
About how, like, I guess in that animated episode. They don't actually show Hal Jordan's power battery. They actually don't show the lantern. So, like, at no point do you have any context of why Green Lantern is called Green Lantern. And apparently he was going off for, like, 15 minutes to her about, like, and they don't even show it. It's just, you know.
We're all such
long story short, his girlfriend's not his girlfriend anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Darwin took him.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what happened.
My girlfriend.
Even listening to his story.
His girlfriend.
I thought you meant
Darwin's girlfriend wasn't his girlfriend anymore.
Why would I tell
when she goes to
I don't know. I was kind of confused.
No.
When she goes to
you and Wendy. So when are you and Wendy going to move in with each other?
See, I hate it when he does
this. Any day now, pretty much. We're pretty much waiting for her lease to get finished. And then
really?
Yeah.
Oh. Advancements in Kelly and Wendy's relationship.
Fascinating.
But just FYI, whenever we go to a comic book thing, and she's got like a fancy comic book party to go to, like a Hero Initiative party or a Windy City party.
She's going to ask for someone else to take her?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm dead to her.
Oh, I'm
really?
Dead.
Yeah, yeah. Why? She's going to go home with you, Mike. That's her plan.
No, let's not do that. What?
Oh, no. Not at all. It's not anything like that. She's actually very great.
But. She's got a podcast now. We should
plug her. The Comic Book Slumber Party.
Yeah. Comic Book Slumber
Party. That's girls her only. You got to get a special invitation from, like,
I'm waiting.
Apparently, they have a token fanboy every once in a while.
Yeah, so yeah. They just had your buddy Giant Itz on. Yeah.
I haven't heard.
He was spilling the dirt on you, man. You got to listen to that.
Whoa.
I don't know Jai that well.
Well, he
seems to know you. Well, or thinks he does.
He's part of the Kansas City Mafia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kansas City Mafia.
I guess.
You know, there's an actual Kansas City Mafia,
right? Not anymore.
Well, sure.
Kansas City
Mafia. Not that you've outed them.
They get together and go eat barbecue. Like,
we're the Mafia.
Actually, Kevin Mellon.
Watch Chiefs games.
I tweeted today that I was, shutting the computer off, leaving work, and going to challengers.comics. And Kevin Mellon, like, out of the blue, says, talk about B. Clay Moore, because he gets upset when people don't mention him on podcasts.
He really does.
Kansas City Mafia, B. Clay Moore.
I'll tell a story about Clay. No, this is a funny story.
Are we going to do this? Because I got tons of
them. No, this isn't a bad story. This is a funny story. It's actually at C2E2, me and someone else, I don't remember who I'm walking with. It might have been Hank. I don't remember who it was. But me and someone else are walking around C2E2, and it was the setup day.
It was Thursday.
Yeah, it was Thursday night. And we're walking around, and I see Clay, and he's standing there next to, I think, the Oni booth, and he's talking to somebody. And I walk up to him, and I just kind of say hi, and I stand there for a second. And he basically does not acknowledge.
Oh, he blew you off.
No, no. Wait, listen. So he does not acknowledge me whatsoever. He's talking to someone, mm-hmm. and I was just like, oh, whatever. And after a few seconds standing there, I walked away. Well, he literally tracked me down, and he's like, dude, I was not blowing you off at all. I know that's what it seemed like, but he was talking business with someone, okay. and I was like, oh, I didn't. I mean, I didn't actually think that he blew me off.
Yeah, because Clay wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but it was just funny that he like tracked me down. He's like, I just wanted you to know, I did not blow you off. I'm like, don't worry about it, dude. It's cool.
Don't say it on the podcast.
You probably should fucking blow me off. It doesn't, I'm not going to be doing this podcast in 3 months, so you can blow me off. It's not really going to matter. I can't talk,
I'm looking forward to, what was it, the ultimate Hawaiian dick or oversized dick or whatever.
Giant-sized Hawaiian dick.
Giant-sized dick.
He comes up with projects so he can just make up those names.
I swear
to God, that's all he does it for. I don't even think he likes the comic anymore. He just likes making up names like that.
He's great big dick.
Huge dick.
I was going to email him because he tweeted about, can someone come over here and take my 31 random ideas and put them into a cohesive pitch? And I'm like,
such an idea guy.
I'm like, absolutely. Yes, I can do that.
I can do
that. Can you take my fucking pitch and turn it into a script? I'll trade you because I got 10 or 15 pitches, no scripts.
One of the people that we have gotten to know over the years that I honestly love talking with Clay. He is such a good guy. Plus, you can talk soccer with him.
Soccer? That's a bonus. I figured that.
I think there's going to be some kind of exchange program where we give him to England and we get Anthony Johnston, because I've never seen a British dude like American football as much as that guy.
Really?
Weirds the shit out of me.
But he's a fucking Dolphins fan.
Can he like football?
I'm in a fucking cabin.
Is he only getting broadcasts from the 80s when Marino was?
I don't know. There's a tape delay.
I'm just watching old
Ben Marino, he's fantastic.
Anthony Johnson is in the back of this cab, and I'm in the front seat. And I was asking him, I said, "Well, are you a football or a rugby fan?" And he's like, "Well, I'm actually an American football fan. I root for the Miami Dolphins."
And you're like, "Why?"
And I turn around to him, and I was like, "Was a Bears fan? I would like to say fuck you."
Yeah. You're not a Bears fan. Do we really got to get into this?
I am a Bears fan. No. Seriously?
Yeah, well, this year, because they're 9-3.
Oh, come on. I've been
ask
a Bears
him,
fan.
Ask him how much of a Bears fan he was in the 90s when
the
Rams were good.
The 90s, it was all about the Oilers.
No, it was the Rams. It was the Rams. He was the greatest show on turf.
No,
Bruce Isaac.
I was living in St. Louis in 1999.
Don't. Listen, you got more teams than anybody I've ever seen. Whether, it's like, oh, the guy, he's Mr. Blackhawks last year, but he's got a St. Louis Blues Pronger poster on his fucking wall.
You cannot have multiple teams.
You
don't really have teams either.
Yeah.
Bandwagon jumper.
I can't just gotta get that out football.
There. We do this every fucking day.
Oh, he's Mr. Cardinals fans unless the White Sox are winning.
No, I can have an American League team. I can have an American League team.
No. Then you can't badmouth the DH. That's what you did. Yeah, if you have an American League team, you can't.
For those of you watching at home, they're now physically hitting each other. That's what's happening.
I don't like SportsCenter.
All right, that's enough sports. Yeah, I just wanted to get it out there.
DH is an abomination, but I can still
see. That's how we.
You're an abomination.
Go fuck yourself, Dan Slott. Oh, wait, I don't even know where that. I don't know.
Adam Dunn's going to hit 50 bombs.
All right, are we done here? I think so.
We just pulled the string on it.
I think we will. This is going to come out sometime here in December, but mm-hmm. we're also, I think, going to repurpose our holiday episode we did a long time ago with the Around Comics.
What's
players?
Oh, no.
What's
work together? Because I still got some unaired.
We literally work together.
Very depressing, Mike.
I've got some unaired C2E2.
Jesus Christ!
Recordings.
It's almost.
Those are the lost tapes.
The lost.
I have an awesome. Conversation with Doug Mankey and Pete Tomasi and Christian Alame that Christian emails me about once a week asking when I'm going to release this.
Chris, where is that now? Where is
maybe it? Pretty much. It's yeah. He's
where's that tape?
Kind of sounded like him.
That was pretty good.
Where is Christian?
I want to know.
You know, I forgot to email him. He's going to be upset because he would have been here tonight.
Oh, well, so maybe next time. Maybe next month.
We would have talked about Jacques Tardy.
The French Alex Toth, as you put it.
I like how the 24-hour comic, he totally deflated you on JRJR.
What?
Yeah, when I remember we were doing 24-hour comics day. Mm-hmm. Or 24-hour comic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you guys roll in your motley band of drunkards. And you're sitting on the couch, and I'm sitting there working on the table doing stuff, and you're talking to you know, everybody around. And you were talking about the Avengers with JRJR on it.
Yeah.
And Christian steps up and goes, "Oh, great guy. Oh, you know, good artist, but I don't really like him as a comic book artist at all. You know, it's like he's very skilled, and I like him, but you know, and because I made an offhand comment of like he's just not my favorite, you know, guy. I liked his father, you know, better, that style, you know, and JRJR just doesn't appeal to me." And Christian, you know, caught a piece of that because you were extolling how great that Avengers, that the new Avengers spin up, with, you know, Captain America and all them on.
Really?
When they're fighting Kang or
that doesn't
whatever
sound like you at all.
No, that wouldn't make.
He was drinking a flask of Jim Beam, you know, and I'm sure you guys had rolled in from one bar to another bar, you know. And
or he could just be making it up. I think he's making it up.
You know, it's probably on the Challenger's cam. You know, you can probably see this whole conversation.
Good thing there's no audio on that cam.
Roll the tape back.
You'll see a lot of animated hand gestures.
Let's not talk. Let's not talk about Christian talking bad about someone else.
No. He's not here. He liked him. No, he wasn't talking smack. He said, like, he's a great artist, but you know, not my favorite comic book guy. You know, that's really what it was. You know. And, you know, I think we all have like that.
Well, there's some people we love, and they're just Christian would say that you just need to buy Green Lantern.
Oh well, yeah, of course,
yeah, and you know.
All right, you fucking are we done? Animals, you rogues. Yes, we're done. We're done recording from Rogues Gallery at Challengers Comics and Conversation.
Yes.
18 something or another.
What's it?
Western Avenue. Avenue.
1845?
Western Avenue?
Yeah.
Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. ChallengersComics.com.
It's just south of the Blue Line stop.
This episode was brought to you by Fanboy Legion. Go buy some patches so my wife doesn't have to go back to work. And my children don't starve.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
It was fun.
Yeah. Another good episode. Another
Mike, thanks. Tom, sure. Thanks.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Kyle Figley, who is halfway to Michigan by now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kyle, yes. I love talking with Kyle.
Yeah.
I like
talking. Yep. Good stuff. All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And this is December. We'll be back in
January.
In 2011.
Yeah. See you next year.
Maybe around Christmas for maybe a little Christmas present on the feed. So we'll work on that, hopefully. So.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. Well,
Rhubarb.
All right. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again in January. Hopefully. In between time.
Don't make any plans.
In the meantime?
No, we don't do that.
Around comics? Yeah, blah. All right. Bye.
Well, that's it. Another Around Comics episode. Hope you enjoyed it. We sure enjoyed putting it on, or saying it, or whatever the heck it is we do. That's probably going to be it for 2010 for us for this year, and we just want to say thank you for listening, not only to this episode, but for listening to us over the years. We've had, you know, quite a bit of ups and downs with this show over the years. We've had all sorts of crazy inconsistent schedules and format changes and everything else, but the one thing that we've tried to do is be entertaining throughout it all, and we hope that that we have. So thank you from Chris and I. Thank you so much, and have a happy holiday.
It's a fanboy Christmas at Renfests and conventions. We're sending all the fruitcakes to alternate dimensions. Bashir walked into the bar. "What would you like?" Quark said. Bashir responded, "Eggnog," and Nog got egged in the head. Ow! Buffy the Vampire Slayer made a really crappy film. Luke Perry and Paul.
Views expressed by guests are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinion of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited.
All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2010.
Girls, he'll suck you dry. Oh, Mulder and Scully are on my rooftop. What have they come here to see? UFO reindeer? Is it St. Nick? No, it's a big conspiracy. So just send the man in black home, because they annoy us. We need a little X-Files now. Now my DM is a curmudgeon. He trapped me in a dungeon. I hope these dice will save my troll. Let it roll, let it roll, let it roll. Now you may think my life is tragic, 'cause I play with cards of magic that cost me my eternal soul. Let it roll, let it roll, let it roll. It's a fanboy Christmas from Roswell to Missouri. We're wishing happy Kwanzaa to Lando and Uhura. Our Jewish friends have opened the gifts that we did buy them. The brand new kosher transformer, Optimus L'chaim! A demigod, Zine has a killer bod. Yolis died and Gabby cried, 'cause Joxer is a clod. Oh, Tribble, 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 you're made of fluffy fur. Tribble, 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 we love to hear you purr. Tribble, 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 you're really just a pain. Tribble, 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 you ate up all our grain. Get on your Tonica, it's done. And have a happy, happy, happy Star Wars Hanukkah. It's a fanboy Christmas, the temperature is nipply, so throw aliens on the fire with that new clone of Ripley. The anime cartoon stars are all getting along. The Dementites and Dementoids are all listening to this song. Woo! Danger, danger, young Will Robinson. Dr. Smith is coming, Will Robinson. I know you have been searching for Babylon. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're hungry, have some fish heads. Eat them up, yum. Eat them up, yum. Eat them up, yum. Linoleum.
Tonight's film, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Don't talk to me about It's a Wonderful Life.
Christmas, Christmas time is here. I hit the toy store each year. Slip the Stalker A20 action figure. Charge 12 times what they're worth. Gee, this Christmas time is swell. Until all the little kids who want to buy the toys just so that they can play with them all get together and hunt me down and catch me and kill me, and then I'll burn in hell. It's a fanboy Christmas, and outside it's a blizzard. So curl up by the fire with your copy of Wizard. Lara Croft's new Yule Raider, it just might oversex us. And Wolverine is here to wish us all a Merry Xmas. Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg. The Batmobile broke its wheel and the Joker got away. Penguin spewed Riddler's food into Face's cup.
When Catwoman soiled her litter, Alfred cleaned it up. Silent Bob, Jay and Bob, Hatchet Man is their job, just to pod profits with some weird quirks, just to mall rats hassling clerks, always chasing Amy and smoking Snoochie Boochies. God rest ye merry Pokemon inside your Pokeballs. Team Rocket, Jesse, James, and Meowth are here to wreck your halls. No decorations will they hang, nor carols will they sing. They're too busy Poke Christmas card collecting, stealing all that they can get from Burger King. Should Voyager ever get home and again see Earth's sunshine, then you'll find me out on the town with my date 7 of 9. It's a fanboy Christmas, no time to dilly-dally. Get all the geeks together, cause it's time for the finale. On the 12th day of Christmas, my fangirl gave to me 12 LARPers LARPing, 11 Filkers Filking, 10 Apes from Deep Space, 9 Doctor Who's, 8 Sweet Transvestites, 7 of 9, 6 Ewoks Dancing, 5 Cardassian Lights.
There are 4 lights!
4 Starfleet Captains, 3 Star Wars Prequels, 2 Protocol Droids.
And there can be only 1!
Sci-Fi Channel on my TV. We wish you a fanboy Christmas.